I call the October 5th regular meeting of the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. So shall we adopt the agenda for the meeting?
Yeah.
Any changes?
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, just one thing. I just want to add something just for a brief discussion, not to get too deep in the weeds on it, but I know there's a lot of discussion about the cost of community services study. So just maybe add that under new business and just kind of get some board consensus on that one, but that's all that I have.
All right, any objections?
No.
All right, great. So we'll start with the county administrator's report. Oh, well, I'm sorry, without objection, the agenda is adopted. Now we'll hear the county administrator's report.
I think the board has to vote on the adoption of the agenda. Do both board members vote on it?
I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion's been made to adopt the agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes without objection. And now I will pass the gavel on to Mr. Sheridan.
Sorry about that.
We can begin with the county administrator.
Hot dog. Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, got a few things to update for you. So one, got a few new, some employees coming back and some new employees. So Clifton Thomas, HVAC specialist. He started in the facilities department August 31st, so we're glad to have him back working for the county. Travis Lawson just started October 3rd as the new athletics and special events coordinator for Parks and Rec. And I know Mr. Spitzer, after all the work he did for the county fair, is definitely glad to have someone filling in the shoes of the previous person that was there, and my mind's drawing a blank right now. And then also, Ms. Victoria Melton, she was applied and has been appointed as the Director of Finance for the Finance Department. She started in that position on September 11th.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And then going back, it was Dylan Morris that left. I apologize for forgetting his name. Friday, September 23rd, so Dominion Energy completed the controlled demolition of the Brema Power Station located at Brema Bluff. So I've got a little video here just to show the board of kind of the demolition of that. Let me just see if it'll work here. So there you go. It's pretty quick. You can see the implosion of it. And just like that, probably months and years of planning, and it's all done in less than 10 seconds.
Impressive to watch.
I noticed the back building didn't fall with it.
I think what they're doing on that one, I think they're still going to be dismantling that one but with excavation equipment and stuff like that. And I'm not sure if I hadn't heard otherwise why that wasn't. I know the two big smokestacks were going down, but I'm not sure why that one wasn't.
Gotcha.
And all the plant around it, too.
Correct, yeah.
Having driven that one still had more structure to it than the other one. The other one you could just see through it.
Yeah. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If you are the victim of domestic violence or know someone who is, help is only a phone call away. Call the Savannah Victim Witness Assistance Program at 591-1985. Or they can also contact Shelter for Help and Emergency, SHE, at 293-8509 for assistance. Saturday, October 29th at Pleasant Grove Park is the 18th annual Halloween Festival and Trunk or Treat. There'll be a semi-scary haunted trail and Trunk or Treat, and Trunk or Treat starts at 6:30 p.m. and ends at 8:30. It's free and open to the public. I know Mr. Spitzer, you know, was always looking for additional people to be there and, you know, have your vehicle set up to hand out candy and stuff like that. So if you plan on doing so, you have to go through Flavanna Rec Desk and register to do that. And again, they can contact Parks and Rec, 434-589-2016, Monday through Friday. And the trunks must be registered by noon Thursday, October 27th. And starting in October, which is just started here, so the annual Friends of the Library are going to be having their book sale at the library. So it starts Thursday, October 6th, tomorrow, and goes through Saturday, October 22nd. So the hours of the library are below there. And a special thanks to the 2022 book sale corporate sponsor, Monticello Country Real Estate and Our Lady of Peace. So if you have any questions about the big book sale, we can contact the library, and all proceeds benefit the Friends of the Flavanna Library, which kind of goes back into the library itself. So we've got a community meeting coming up here for a proposed development. Nothing's been submitted yet, but the developer wanted to have a community meeting to kind of inform the public. So White Oak Solar Farm is having a community meeting on Wednesday, October 12th from 6:30 p.m. from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And they're holding it at the Light Academy in the cafeteria, which is at 479 Cunningham Road. So the White Oak Solar Farm is a proposed 38-megawatt solar project located off Shores Road, about 2 miles south of Kid's Store. The estimated project area is around 355 acres. So anyone wanting to know more, you know, a good way to kind of educate yourself, know more about, you know, solar, you know, certainly we're probably going to see more projects and proposals like this coming through, but this is probably one of the bigger ones that the county has seen to this point.
And you said it's where?
It's at the old Cunningham School.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, at the Light Academy, which is the old Cunningham School.
Thank you.
Yep, off Cunningham Road. And then some upcoming regular meetings. Wednesday, October 19th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting. Wednesday, November 2nd at 5 p.m. we have a regular meeting. And then Wednesday, November 16th at 7 p.m. we have a regular meeting. Also, one thing we were going to add on here that we didn't, the elected officials breakfast.
Yes.
Elected officials breakfast. We're setting something up and we're looking at, what was
November 10th.
November 10th. We'll send something out to the board to kind of put a placeholder on your calendars for you. And we'll also be sending out an email if there's any particular topics that the boards want to ask their legislators. I think Senator Peake cannot make it. But I know Delegate Ware and Bell have both indicated they can make it. And is anyone else that?
Not that's been confirmed.
Okay.
The email just went out from David Long.
You said November the what?
November 10th.
Oh, when is the day coming?
It's right after that. It's that following weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, or the starting Sunday.
Okay.
Yep.
Did you mention that it's National Teachers Day?
I did not.
Oh dear, you can't miss that. We have a teacher sitting right here, and one
and
tired one.
And my wife's a principal, and she's probably giving me a good stiff elbow
yes.
to the back.
Oh,
something.
How could you forget National Teachers Day?
You just hadn't gotten to it yet.
Thank you, Spirit.
Thanking teachers for all that they do.
Yes.
They just don't get all that they should get, but we want them to know that we appreciate it. Mike, we appreciate
well,
you.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I'm glad I found it out right now.
Oh, you did. It's all over the radio and TV.
Yeah, that's true. Teachers.
Oh. And I apologize for being late. I just messed up my reputation. Always here, right?
That's all
anyway,
I have for the board.
And left my phone at home, so I couldn't call you.
This one kind of goes along with this, and I'm just going to add this real quick. Does anybody have any questions, comments for Mr. Dahl?
I've just got one thing. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
After talking to Eric today, it seems like there's not a lot, nothing heavy on the agenda for the next meeting, at least so far. And so I'll probably, yeah. Is that the most annoying prayer you've ever heard? And at, so I probably won't be there for the next meeting, and spoke of the, was
noise
it breakfast,
ordinance.
You said?
Did you want noise ordinance?
No.
The 10th, the breakfast.
The 10th.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm already scheduled and have been to be out of town, okay. So just I don't know, I'll not be there.
Okay, well, I was just going to add, I talked last time we met about the Rivanna Conservation Alliance, I'll get it right. I knew it was RCA, I just didn't know what RCA stood for. But last Saturday, we went down the river, and we didn't quite get started as early as we wanted to because it was 41 degrees. So we decided very judiciously to hold off on that for a little while. But we started, I guess, about 2 miles east of Palmyra and floated down to the end of Red Bank Lane. We thought it was going to be 6 miles. It wound up being 9.5 miles. But while we were going down, they sent out the stats the other day. They had collected 148 bags of trash. It's people walking the trails and wading in the river. And they collected 140. We took off 173 tires the other day. And I know that we did not get them all because our canoes were about ready to sink. We literally basically put one person per canoe and then just said, just fill it up as high as you can get it. So we took off 173. And I have to tell you, at least four of those tires, and somebody might be able to tell me when the last time they had the wide 4-inch white walls.
It's been a while.
It's prior to my time. We pulled four of those tires out of the river. So those tires have been there 90 years or 80 years, something of that nature.
The county also, I think there's a section right now where there's about 40 tires that we've been in coordination with someone with
down
us.
At Mr. Lester's. 52.
Yep. Okay.
Trust me, we had to tote them about 50 yards through the briars and everything else.
We're going
to
be
We missed the takeout. We were a little early.
We're going to be assisting with picking those tires.
Where do y'all take the tires once you get them out?
They had coordinated. There was a lawn service out of Albemarle that agreed to come down and pick them up because just like we do our tire collection day, Albemarle's getting ready to do a tire collection day, and they've said we can bring the tires we take out of the Rivanna. Literally got two tractor tires up. One we decided when Luke got down there and couldn't budget, we said we're going to leave this one alone. It still had the rim in it. It was a skidder tire. So it was about 2.5 feet wide. So that one's still there. All right. Thank you very much. I just wanted to let y'all know that was a success. And I'd like to thank Kathleen and Tracy for letting us exit the river at their property.
And there's two other things I wanted to bring up really quick to the board. I apologize. One, in your sheet of agenda and stuff behind there, there's a letter from Lake Monticello from the board of directors, basically just wanting to put the invite out to the board of supervisors. You know, they thought it may be good or beneficial if maybe periodically, maybe one board member came to one of their board meetings. Again, we've got three board members that represent Lake Monticello. So right on here is the date. And this letter shows the date of the meeting. So I mean, if the board wants to, you know, coordinate with me or multiple people are going, or if you want to get an email or something going, you know, we can coordinate that way. But they just wanted to put the offer out there and thought it maybe would be beneficial to get information out to the...
Yeah, this came to us before.
Did it?
Last week. Yeah. Last meeting.
Oh, so I went...
Last meeting or sometime.
Well, then maybe I'm forgetting things, which is possible. Yeah.
I don't remember it coming last week.
Yeah, I've seen this before. Okay. It's maybe it's on my...
Well, it's another good reminder.
Somebody sent us an email. I remember looking at it.
Yeah.
And I've offered to do the same, so I'm sure anybody with the lake would be perfectly happy to do so.
And then one last thing. So the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission is embarking on the regional transit governance study, which really kind of looks at the regional transit vision plan. And so they're trying to get members from each of their localities, one staff member and one elected official, one board member, to kind of sit on this So they're planning on having a kickoff meeting at the end of the month, and then I think they're going to maybe have three other meetings. I don't know the times or anything like that at this point. But I think Ms. Harris said she would participate, and then if one of the board members would be so kind to participate as well, and really just kind of looking at, you know, the transit plan for urban and rural communities, you know, looking at getting people to increase employment and services by adding additional transit options, and just kind of really getting everyone on the same page for what that.
I'll do that.
And I should note that
it's
end of October. I don't think we have a date.
End of October. We don't have a date or anything, but we will get you the information. Tomorrow we'll send TJPDC an email with your name and Ms. Harris's name, and then you'll be on any email list.
TJPDC also hosted an event, and it was all about solar, and so I'll make sure that the board gets copies of the presentations that were made. It was very informative and helpful and useful, talking a little bit about agri-solar and different ways to deploy solar, and then the impact and some of the changes that are happening in terms of legislation and equity. That was good.
Very good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I tried to get on online. Couldn't get on to watch it, but some people sent me a link. Yeah. Someone else still watching.
All right. All righty. Thank you very much, folks. And Ms. Eager, thanks for volunteering for that. Ms. Harris, you as well. All right. I will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the microphone, state your name, address. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time?
Mr. Chairman, board, Corbin Flynn, 319 Shiloh Church Road. I'm going to talk about your comments in the previous meeting, I think it was September 21st, regarding the consent agenda. And you specifically were talking about the minutes, which I happened to bring up. And I think Mr. Sheridan made the comment, well, Mr. Weaver used to change the minutes all the time, and specifically the September 7th minutes. Ms. Eager pointed out that there was a change in those minutes. And there's a distinct, significant difference in what I was telling you guys. I think all of you, including the administration, know that. But I just want to point it out. The minutes that you corrected in the last meeting, the September 7th minutes that Ms. Eager pointed out, was a draft. They were not approved minutes. They were not minutes that were published and a part of an actual meeting. And so my comment about you never having amended minutes in 10 years is not just my opinion, it's a fact. It's never been done. There's a huge difference in correcting the drafted minutes and fixing those. There's no doubt you've done that. There's several in me looking where you could go back and amend those if you so choose to really dig into it. Whether there's significance in those changes that would need to be done or not, that's maybe for another time to discuss. But this particular meeting just so happens to be the June 15th meeting that I believe is invalid. So actually the minutes are invalid as well. The minutes that you passed for that invalid meeting were actually accurate. But then you chose to amend them. There is a difference. You can talk about that later in tonight's consent agenda or in the closed session, however you want to handle it. But there's a distinct difference. And Mr. O'Brien, you said, well, maybe we need to make it record, and sort of laughed it off in the last meeting. No, maybe we need to make sure that this is a matter of record. We change the minutes all the time. No, you don't. One time, folks, over 200 meetings, and it just so happens to be that particular meeting. And then, on top of that, you got close, Mr. O'Brien. You said the word, or we may not have mentioned funeral. All you needed to say was his funeral wasn't mentioned. In the last meeting, you mentioned that. Of course, none of that's in the minutes. I don't expect it to be in the minutes. Like Mr. Sheridan said, you couldn't put all that in minutes, but it's obviously out there on audio and video. Minutes are significant. You changed those minutes. You revised those minutes. You amended those minutes. You can call it whatever you want, but you've done it one time. Correcting minutes that you have not put in place and you have not approved are not amending minutes that have already been approved. Very simple. I think that it's important that if you guys weren't aware of that, that you're aware of that. And it's important that the public is aware of it. It's unfortunate that not very many people show up to these meetings and not very many people actually go online and view them. I noticed that. And so you guys, you folks, you get to direct the narrative and operate the county, and we elect you and hope that you will do that in representing us. Again, the county chart, citizens, which all of you are a part of, citizens of Fluvanna, then you, then the administration. There's been very, very little that the administration, since me coming here beginning in June, that they've brought to you guys that you all haven't just passed right on through. You got 440 pages tonight, a package that you're going to go through. I know one thing. If I was a board member, I'd have to be honest and say, I didn't read those 440 pages and look into all this. I'm hoping and trusting and putting faith in my administration to be looking out for the county. I know you guys are wearing short on hearing me talk about the June 15th meeting. I just want you to do things right. That's all I ask. Just do things right. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to address the board this time? And I do need to add, I forgot to add this, if you want to talk about the public hearing, that will be done at 7 o'clock, not now. I see no one inside. Is there anyone online? No. All righty, I will now close the first round of public comments. The public hearing will be tonight at 7 o'clock, so we'll move forward with action matters. Selection of voting credentials for the 2022 VACO annual business meeting. Mr. Dahl?
Yeah, again, pretty simple. Article 6, VACO bylaws states that each county shall designate a representative of its board of supervisors to cast a vote at the annual business meeting. Again, is allowed the county to designate a non. The bylaws allow you to elect a non-elected individual, but again, it's a practice that the board has selected a board member. So we just have to have this submitted by November 7th to certify the vote and who's voting. And so, pretty simple. It's we've done the board chair previously, and then we select an alternate. So those are really the two motions there for. Having the vote at the annual meeting.
I'm going to be there. It doesn't matter to me if somebody else would like to vote. That's fine.
I'll be there, but it doesn't matter to me either. So.
All right.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve Michael Sheridan to be the voting delegate representing Fluvanna County by casting votes at the 2022 annual business meeting of the Virginia Association of Counties.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'll sit this one out. Motion passes 4-0-1. Do we have a motion for someone to be the second?
Are you going to be next?
No, I'm going to be at VACO. I wasn't necessarily planning on being at the annual meeting, but...
Well, the annual meeting, well, yeah, well, annual I mean, this...
That's the Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's in case... I guess it's in case Mr. Sheridan cannot vote for something.
We can, make it. Are you planning on being there?
I'm going to be there, yeah.
I mean, we can make it Mr. Dahl.
Yeah.
Okay. Board of Supervisors approve Mr. Dahl, Eric Dahl, be appointed alternate delegate representing Fluvanna County by casting votes at the 2022 annual business meeting of the Virginia Association of Counties.
Do we have a second?
Second.
I apologize. I took a bite right before we did this. Motion's made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Do you know what you'll be voting on?
Just the The legislative agenda. And the minutes we'll have to approve. Or the previous meeting and things of that nature. It's very similar to this, and there'll be 110 of us sitting in there.
Right.
At least, well, it won't be that many, probably be by 75.
Okay.
Alrighty, so A is done. Now B, judicial assistant job description, Ms. Snow.
Yeah, Ms. Snow, and I'll take some of it too. She can answer more of the specific questions on the position, and I'll kind of talk more about why this is coming about. So one, Judge Moore is retiring. He's been the sitting judge in Fluvanna for a while now. With that occurring, let me kind of go back. Currently, Fluvanna County shares the judicial assistant costs for Judge Moore's judicial assistant. The city of Charlottesville is the employer of the judicial assistant, and because Judge Moore goes between Fluvanna and the city, most of his time is in the city. So we pay 25% for the judge's assistance costs or personnel costs, and then we pay 10% for office supply costs. That's kind of how things are right now. So with the judge retiring, a new circuit court judge is being assigned to Fluvanna, who is Judge Bredo. So he is going to be splitting his time 50% between Fluvanna and Greene County. The effective date for the incoming circuit court judge is December 1st. So it's anticipated that, you know, as time goes, Fluvanna's got a little larger population, that there may be some further time in being spent in Fluvanna at some point, potentially, just due to a population standpoint. And is also being requested by the judge that Fluvanna County be the employer for the judge's new judicial assistant. So at a future meeting, a memorandum, assuming the board approves all this, a memorandum of agreement would be brought before the board. So we would work on a memorandum of agreement, just like we have with the city of Charlottesville right now with Green. And so we would have an agreement with Green that Green would agree to pay 50% of personnel costs or any other ancillary costs that goes along with the judge's judicial assistant. The judicial assistant will be spending time here in Fluvanna County when the judge is here. Then when the judge is sitting in Greene County, the judicial assistant will be in Greene County as well. But it'll be a employee in a position of Fluvanna County. And Ms. Snow could talk about, you know, if the board has questions specifically about the position itself. But that's kind of the history of why this is being brought forward. I think the one thing I didn't add from a cost standpoint is, so one, right now in the current budget we have about $21,800, I think, is the number that we have budgeted to pay the city of Charlottesville. What's going to happen with this change, there's going to be some additional costs coming to Fluvanna County for this change, and probably for this fiscal year it's going to be in the range of $5,000 to $10,000. And then we're looking at probably about a half year's worth of costs. But for next fiscal year, it could be $10,000 to $15,000 in costs. We don't really know until the judge hires a position and we kind of get everyone in place. But that's just kind of just something, some from back history for the board. But like I said, Ms. Snow could certainly answer questions from the position standpoint, and I can answer any questions on the judges and the structure standpoint.
I know you may not know this, but since he is moving from Charlottesville, which is a much more involved, huge place, and with Green, you think we're going to get the judge here often? I mean, will he be with us more? I know you probably can't answer it, but it seems to me that he will probably spend more time here.
I'll just tell you, as far as numbers of students, we're pretty close to being equal. I mean, we're a little bit higher than
that.
Green.
Yeah, I mean, right now, just speaking with one, Miss Treadway, clerk of the court, and then, you know, just having some correspondence back and forth with Judge Barreto, you know, he's thinking right now it's going to be, and as Miss Treadway said, probably, you know, a good 50-50, but it could potentially lean a little more towards Fluvanna at some point. Yeah. And we don't know if that's day one. They'll just have to kind of see how the caseload works. Mm-hmm. And usually some of these agreements, they're usually set for a couple years and can kind of be re-looked at and reviewed to determine if the caseload and the split still you know, kind of agreeable with both counties.
Well, I was going to say, didn't you give us a number on the screen before that said 21,000 is what we're paying right now?
Yeah, 21.8 is what.
And that's 25%, so pretty much you can just double that. Although we may get somebody with not as much experience in the job, so it could come down a little bit. But it's probably going to cost us for half a year, right around 10,000 to 11,000.
So just on a real basic, I think the minimum position salary amount is 46. And so I've got a certain percentage above that based upon, you know, criteria. And then there's going to be some, you know, just office supply
help,
costs and things like that,
and
insurance. So again, I have a feeling we're going to probably be closer to, I'm thinking probably 30 to 35,000 is probably going to be our split at some point, right around there. That's just kind of ballparking it right at this moment.
Mr. Bell, who pays Judge Barreto's salary?
State.
The state.
Yep.
I'm going to miss seeing Judge Moore at EW.
Yep. Yeah, Judge Moore, like I said,
come over there and give me a hard time.
You'd see Judge.
He would come to the staff get together.
He would come to the employee annual luncheon. Do you see Judge Moore walking across the bridge, walking to EW to get his lunch? And you know, like I said, he's been great for Savannah County. But you know, like I said, like everyone, they want to retire at some point. So.
Yeah. Do we do anything when he retires? Does he have any?
You know, I will ask Ms. Treadway, I mean, I don't know from a court standpoint, but I'll ask Ms. Treadway, who's, you know, more kind of connected with kind of what the judge does, mm-hmm. and I can find out from there.
Joint appreciation.
Let me just say that if you want to express your appreciation for Judge Moore's performance and his work, he richly deserves it.
Yes,
he's
he
one
does.
Of the best judges I've ever appeared.
Yes, I hate to say him.
And he's, it's... On top of his pure judicial performance, he has a wonderful personality. He's a very nice man, and he's very considerate of everybody in the court. Not all judges are. So.
And how long has he been sentenced to Savannah, do you know?
I don't remember.
I don't know. The last time he was at E-Dubs, he looked up. I'm sitting here getting us food for lunch, and trying to hurry back to school now here. You sure that's what you ought to be eating for lunch, everybody?
So all overhead will be shared, though. It's an employee of Savannah, but benefits, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, again, salary, benefits, everything, whatever that is, it's going to be shared with Greene County. And we're just going to have to work on the memorandum of agreement and what that split looks like. Again, it's been discussed 50-50.
Same office materials was the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that can't be. But
yeah.
So much.
Yeah. And again, the office the office supply piece with the Charlottesville agreement was less because they spent a lot more time in there. And just because they want to buy certain things doesn't necessarily mean, from a Charlottesville standpoint, didn't necessarily mean that we agreed with all those costs. So, but I think we'll, again, it'll be close to a 50-50 split.
All righty.
So,
any other questions?
Got off easy, Ms. Snow.
Yeah, I did.
All right, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the job description for the Judicial Assistant for the Office of the Circuit Court Judge.
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm struggling on that one for a second. Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Payne, you said you're going to miss seeing him behind the bench. I really didn't want to have to go in there and see him behind the bench.
Generally speaking, I can count on getting out.
I just
want
to mention one other note really quick, not to interrupt you guys. Our employee wellness fair, if you wanted to mention to Judge Moore as well, is Friday, October 14th from 11:30 to 2. Yeah. You guys want to stop by.
And we have lunch. We've got an email on that we can just forward it to you as well.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you
very much, ma'am.
Boy, what? I looked at the job description of the judicial assistant. It is.
It's a very important position.
It sure is.
It's much more than anyone, any position like this was mm-hmm. 20 years ago. In fact, I would say probably 40% and I'm just making that number up, but that's my impression, of the contested cases in circuit court it's scheduled through the administrative assistant, whereas they used to go, like you said, in open court. And the current judicial assistant has done a bang-up job, too. So I didn't need to short-circuit that.
All righty.
So, yeah, so we'll be putting the job description out probably come tomorrow, because I know he's anxious to get someone hired and wants to make sure that it doesn't appear that he's poaching from someone else if someone wants to come and be his judicial assistant, so, yeah.
All righty, appointment 7A, appointments. C, board, commission, and committee appointments. Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, so board members, so we've got two at-large Board of Building Code Appeals positions up for appointment or reappointment. So currently the two incumbents are James Halstead and Gary Osteen. They're the incumbents. And then you also have three additional appointees that are that have put their hat in, Gene Ott, Josh Bauer, and Nelson Cook Jr. So I'm happy to open up any of the appointments or any of the applications if the board wants to see them.
And we need five.
You know, do you just need two?
Two.
Yeah.
We have five applicants.
You have five applicants. Yeah, but and you need to put in two. And again, you have two incumbents that want to be reappointed.
All right.
How long have Mr. Halstead and Mr. Osteen been serving?
What was that?
I was asking how long the two incumbents have been serving.
We'll find out really quick here.
Probably since 2018.
So 2 years for Mr. Halstead. And also 2 years.
2 years for both of them.
2 years?
2 years for both of them, yeah.
I thought it was a four-year term.
They may have been completing an unexpired term.
Yeah. Oh.
I think it'd be a favor for letting them stay on.
I spoke with Andy Wills.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I've not heard of this commission before, how often they meet. He said they don't.
They don't.
So.
Mrs. Eager asked me how often they meet. And I remember their meeting. It hasn't happened, but it's rare. This body is a good deal more technical than most of these appeal bodies, and from that standpoint, in a sense, they're simple because you either meet the intent of the code or subject to a reasonable variation, or you don't. It's not really very, there's not much discretion involved typically. And so, in my experience, as I have done other boards too, represented other boards, I would say experience in the field is at a premium.
Well, Josh Bauer and Nelson Cook both have experience in architecture.
Well, like I said, if the board wants me to pull up any of the applications, I'm happy to do so.
Can you pull up Mr. Osteen and Mr. Halstead?
He's been a plumber for.
Yeah, he's been a master plumber for a long, long time.
One of them have only been here a short time.
That's
1 year.
Mr. Halstead looks like Earth Tech, Civil Engineering, Structure, Mullen Associates Structural Engineering, and the Gaines Architects. Planning Commission, Sheriff Reserve. Mr. Halstead has some technical experience.
Thank you.
So
Mr. Odd, you know, I was on the board.
Once again, we got five.
Been on certainly lots of different boards, committees, and commissions. Mr. Odd in his time with the county. Mr. Bauer, he's right now, he's an architect, licensed architect in Virginia. He's been a partner in his firm since 2017. And again, he's certainly has lots of different experience in different boards, committees, and commissions. I think he said he was on planning commission and maybe even some type of board, city council or board council or borough council before, yeah. And then Mr. Cook, director of pre-construction for a construction company, chief estimator in Seattle and U.S. Navy CB, chairman of Junior Builders Exchange. So, I mean, again, you've got five very technical, qualified candidates, and, you know, they're probably not going to have to put their skills to use too often, but you've got good candidates.
But my assessment is that the two that we have that have already done it, at least volunteered to be on the list, both have great backgrounds. If anything ever happened, they want to do it again, and that we should keep them on.
Yeah, I think they should be able to serve a full term, not an interim term, in my opinion.
Do we have a motion then for Mr. Halstead and Mr. Osteen?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commission or committee appointments. Board of Building Code Appeals, BBC at Large Representative, Mr. James Halstead and Mr. Gary Osteen.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Willing to serve a term?
From 11-1-2022 to 10-31-2026.
All right, motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
I want to commend Nelson Cook. When somebody's been in the community for a month and they're already signing up to be on public service.
Hey, when he's been a CB, how many people thought about John Wayne in the fighting CBs? I don't know about y'all, but that's one of my.
Yeah, my grandfather was a CB, so.
Thank you.
All great people.
Yeah, I mean, it's very nice to sit here and have five superior candidates. Presentation, D, Piedmont Virginia Community College update, Dr. Gene Runyon, president of PVCC.
Newly installed president.
Yeah, welcome.
Congratulations.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to be here on National Teachers Day. I also wanted to recognize Dr. Fred Lang, who's one of our college board members who represents the area. And so just wanted to kind of give you a couple updates. Is there a...
Just let me know when you want me to go to the next slide. I'll proceed for you.
Click now.
Yep.
So first, I am truly honored to be at Piedmont Virginia Community College. I joined the college on July 1st following Dr. Frank Friedman, who served in his role for 23 of the college's 50 years. And I've come from experiences at three different comprehensive community colleges, two in Maryland and one in Colorado. And Virginia is like home to me. My father served in the Navy for 30 years. I went to graduate from Princess Anne High School in Virginia Beach. In fact, I'm going there tonight for a conference and to spend the night with my 90-year-old mother. Mm-hmm. So it's really great to be able to come back here. And so for the last 3 months, I've had an opportunity to really go out on some listening tours and really hearing that what I thought to be true about Piedmont Virginia Community College really is true. The commitment to teaching excellence, commitment to student success, a culture of care, and our strong community partnerships. And this is our 50th anniversary, and this is a very pivotal time in the college's history. So last week we had our birthday party recognizing 50 years when we opened our doors on September 25th in 1972. And going through, and then the next one. Thank you. The college is really what it is today, 50 years of excellence and impact because of the people who've really made the college great and also the community members that have believed in us as well. And so one of the things that we're most proud of is in the last 50 years, 250,000 students have attended Piedmont Virginia Community College, with just over about 17,000 students who've actually earned credentials or degrees. And many other students have also come to us for workforce training and opportunities to also achieve some of their dreams. And we're also proud of our so many community partnerships and our graduates as well. And as you can see, Piedmont Virginia Community College serves six communities as well as the city of Charlottesville. And as part of that, last year we had 1,061 students who graduated from Piedmont Virginia Community College, and 99 of those students indicated that Fluvanna County was their home. One of the partnerships we're most excited about is our partnership with our public schools. And the students in high school are enrolled in dual enrollment programs, so they're receiving college and high school credit. And you can see that 143 students last year were enrolled in dual enrollment programs at Piedmont Virginia Community College. What that means is these students are earning early college credits that give them an opportunity to gain credits to come to PVCC, to transfer to a four-year institution, or enter the workforce early. And these students, by participating in dual enrollment programs, save their parents about $251,000 in tuition and also have a great early college start. And then we're going to, as part of the 50th anniversary, we're going to continue to build on the 50 years of excellence and impact with our dual enrollment programs, ensuring that our students who come to us can transfer with junior status to a four-year institution, or they can go immediately into the workforce, or they can come back and retool and retrain. So we're continuing to build towards the future. And I also wanted to thank you all for your support of helping us build for the future with the new Advanced Technology and Student Success Center. Your contribution of almost $130,000 is putting us on track to open in November 2024, and that will allow us to continue to meet the needs of the communities that we serve. And so as a leader, it's really important for me to listen and learn. So I've been on discovery tour stops throughout the region, and I continue to do so because I really want to find out what makes Piedmont Virginia Community College unique, what do the community members value the most, what are our strengths, what are our opportunities. And we will be embarking on the development of our next strategic plan. And as part of that, really want to learn from all of you how Piedmont Virginia Community College can be a great partner and continue to support the needs of this county as well. And so what I'd like you to do, if those that are joining us virtually, there's a QR code where you can actually go to a survey and share your feedback. And for those of you here that tonight, we've given you a copy of your annual report, there is a QR code that takes you to that survey as well. And so as part of this, tonight was just an opportunity for me to come and say hello. I'm really excited and honored to be serving as president of Piedmont Virginia Community College and to celebrate and reflect on 50 years of excellence and impact. What's also important is that we're looking towards the future, and you have our commitment that we'll continue to provide high-quality education so that the students who come to us can achieve their academic dreams and their professional goals. So again, thank you for the opportunity to say hello. I'm looking forward to being part of the community in which I live and serve, and I look forward to our many collaborations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate all of them. Students have benefited from Fluvanna County.
Piedmont. Dr. Running and Dr. Lang, did a little tour coming around, so we met with both the schools and met with some staff a week or two ago, so we had a really good conversation, just kind of talking about, you know, some needs that we see, and I'm sure the schools had some things as well, so looking forward to that continued partnership and the great things that Piedmont does.
Alrighty, thank you very much. And next up is E, Pearson Appraisal 2023 Reassessment Update. Commissioner of the Revenue, Mr. Sheridan. Oh, that's not Mr. Sheridan. He doesn't talk as much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members, Eric. I am Randy Willis. Most of us have met. I'm with Pearson's Appraisal, and I want to update you on where we stand with the project. We are or have concluded a sales summary through September, and we're doing final edits of properties, and we will start updating pricing schedules within a couple of weeks. I can tell you the market in Fluvanna is doing pretty good, as it is everywhere, even though interest rates have creeped up almost double. Mortgage applications are down, and sales are down, but the values have maintained pretty well. But by your November 2nd meeting, I should be able to share with you numbers that we're seeing across the board that will change, okay? And give you a general idea of what to be on the lookout for as far as your constituents' questions. And do you all have any questions?
So how do we interpret this, I guess? If it says 84.7% of total assessed percentage of sales, that we're saying there's a 16% or roughly 15.3%.
So you do have the summary. That's just a general idea of where the numbers compare currently assessed versus what they're selling for.
So somewhere between 15 to 20%.
And that would be for developed residential properties on tracts, say 10 acres and less, primarily.
Okay.
Yep.
And what are the different zones?
Yeah, I'll pull up the map here. So let's twist it here.
And you know, when I do the sales market analysis, when I first started working here, I thought it was not a good comparison to lump everything into one ratio or comparison, because there is so much difference in the areas of your county. So, and these are not magic lines, but they are zones that I compare. And I think there is differences in these zones as far as the market and demand. And you all know better than I.
You want to pull the numbers back down?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious.
I'm sorry.
The average day on the market as of mid-September for residential property in Fluvanna County was 7 days. That's pretty tight. That means there's a good demand and not a whole lot of inventory, in my opinion.
Where's NASA?
Let's see here.
Can you scroll down?
Yeah, let me go back.
You're a couple of them, Ms. Booker.
You're
five and three.
Five. Six.
No, it's six and five.
Six
and five, mostly.
And then
maybe a little three.
Part of, the number, which one's that? Four?
There's a 40.
It's got to be four. Part of hers will be in four, because that's where the squiggly lines of the river.
Yep, correct. Right around there.
And that's a natural boundary, yes.
Yeah, so five and six. So if we go back to five and six, as you can see there.
And you all living here, you know that the northern, especially northwestern and the western part of the county, that's where your demand is.
But just because we've got this differential of assessed versus sales, that doesn't necessarily equate to the percent increase, just for...
Not across the board, no.
And so that's a total, I'm sorry, what does the number represent? Can you scroll back up to the top just to see that?
Yeah.
Price assessed, that's a number of properties, okay. Zone and number of properties, okay.
And that's a good indication of where the demand is at.
Sure.
And that would exclude Lake Monticello.
All of this excludes
this Lake. One excludes Lake Monticello, so then Lake Monticello.
And that's on a separate page. That would be the lake.
Yeah.
It's a good demand there. And a lot of people have moved there. There are younger people moving in, but it's real attractive for retirees. Not necessarily from Fluvanna County.
Well, you divide the number of sales by the total sales price, and you're you're above 400,000. It's interesting.
And you know, in doing my analysis too, and this is most every locality I work in, 11 to 1200 square foot homes that may be 30 years old and fixed up somewhat on 2 acres of land, they're bringing $220,000 to $240,000 And with our methods, we really can't reach that number. But it's...
Will you elaborate on that? With your methods, you can't reach it?
We would have to, if we were to put pricing schedules in place that would reach those numbers, it would make it inadequate for similar properties. Per square foot.
I gotcha.
And it's just, typically I would not include those sales in my ratio study either.
That's interesting.
That's because if they're currently assessed at 160 and selling for 230, that's quite a difference. But it's a lending thing, and you know, rents have gone up. People need somewhere to live. And if you have rental property, you're probably doing pretty good right now, too.
Can you go back to the big chart with the whole zone? Because I was sitting there, I was looking at this, just trying to do numbers in my head as we go.
And something else, too, interest rates last year at this time were about 3%, and now that they're approaching 7%. And that's going to eliminate a lot of buyers in certain price ranges.
Holy cow.
And we will, you know, I'm going to continue to watch the sales as long as I can before we put the numbers statically in place.
We were talking about numbers. Zone 2 is us. In the Bybee area, Kent Store to Bybee.
That's a good area. It's not as much demand there as there would be in Zone 1.
Correct.
But there is.
I'm just looking at the money, the appraisal versus money that they sold for. That's 33% jump. 1.3 million.
Which one are you looking at, Mr. Sheridan?
Right there, the 12 houses.
Oh, right here?
Yeah. It's a 1.3 difference. And 1.3 of 37 is more than 33%.
That's about 75% of what it's sold for.
35.3%.
Yeah.
But also, that's 12 sales. That's not a lot of sales.
No.
But it's still 12 sales.
And Zone 6 is the only zone that had an increase year over year, from 73 to 77.7. Just curious, what would make that?
And keep in mind, the ratio is the current value compared to what it's sold for. Yeah, so in other words, Zone 6 for 2022, five sales. Comparatively, the assessed value was 77.7% of the sale price.
Yeah.
And
to your point, the low number of sales makes it a hard thing to really track. Because if you had 44 sales,
it's not like it's a trend.
Yeah.
You can still tell the rural areas, they're the ones that are going to have the least amount of houses sold.
Yeah. Right.
Well,
it's still desirable for certain buyers.
Yeah.
So is the insight that the Mr. Fairchild's point that there was a decrease in most of the rural areas in terms of the total number of sales, is that due to availability or due to lack of demand?
A little bit of both. Okay. And, you know, if you look at the prior summary that I presented 2 years ago, the numbers are similar for the zones 4, 5, and 6, mm-hmm. as far as number of sales.
And so for the November 2nd meeting, What Mr. Willis will have, he'll have more of a summary and more information on what are the trends of the increases and decreases of the zones. You know, mm-hmm. I think what he provided before, kind of showing, you know, here's what the increases in the county overall, minus Lake Monticello, with Lake Monticello, the different waterfront properties and stuff like that. So you get a better idea of kind of some of the trends throughout the county, and could we get those increases by the different zones as well?
We can.
Okay.
But they may be a different zone, because looking at this is a geographical zone, and I also have a neighborhood zone set up for pricing that I use actually three neighborhood adjustments. Okay? So I can break those down. And I've got a map of that too. Pretty much the same thing I submitted previously, but It'll give you a good indication, yes.
So just to clarify, this map, the zone map here, you said that there may be something slightly different, like you said a neighborhood map or something like that.
It's different whereas it would show two zones.
Okay. That was what you provided last year, because it was one line kind of going through the county, if I believe correctly.
It's basically zones 1, 2, 3, and part of 5
yep.
are in one zone, and the rest of the county's in the other zone.
Yep.
Okay.
So since we're doing a two-year, are we supposed to take the number at the beginning of 2021? Versus the number at the end of 2022, or where we are at 2022 right now.
When you say the number, what?
Well, in other words, if you go back up to the top of the chart there, as an average, so in 2021, looks like I'm going to pick something that's easy, like the 2021 for Zone 5, 19 sales, that translates to roughly $220,000 in 2021, and then in 2022, well, we only have one sale
for $354,000.
So that doesn't really put it there. But I'm just trying to say, in terms of the total increase of value, this chart doesn't really represent it. But
no, it does. It's, that just gives you an idea of where the numbers stand today comparatively.
But if we look and we say, well, we've got a 20. Go back to the headers, please. If we go back to the total current assessed and look at the percentage of change, that is the percentage of change in that year. So if we just take the two top numbers, just to make the math easy here.
The assessed value is going to be the same number for 21 as well as 22.
It is the same. The assessed number is the same
yes.
for 21 as it is.
Because you're on a two-year cycle.
Okay, so it isn't the cumulative of, say, in this case, being 16% and then another 23%. You're not adding the two together to get to,
No.
All right, that's what I was trying to get clarity on.
Your numbers, once a reassessment is done, your numbers are static for 2 years on the current cycle that you're on.
Mr. Chair, can I also add a few things, Mr. Willis?
Yes, sir. Come on to the microphone. Come to the microphone.
I'll be happy to. Mill Sharon, Commissioner. And Mr. Willis is exactly right. Once that assessment's set at the first of each reassessment year, 21, 23, it stays the same. And that's why I want to, once again, compliment this board on the foresight to do this on a two-year cycle. We have done it on as much as a six-year cycle in the past, and it creates great stress on the assessment versus sale scenario. So I won't belabor that. Just a couple of points I wanted to make. They will very quickly round up all of the additional sales that aren't currently represented there that have to be captured and pull together their actual assessment, and your constituents, all of us, not just citizens of Fluvon, but the landowners who may live in Nevada, but you own property here, and you should be receiving your reassessment notice, and y'all will get questions. Want to make sure y'all got the process down. They anticipate not later than November 14th, I think, Mr. Willis had said.
That's target, yes.
Yeah, that's the target. So effectively, you might see it in your mailbox, or your constituents may be seeing a card in their mailbox sometime just before Thanksgiving. It says your property is being reassessed each parcel. There'll be a card for each parcel. It says each parcel is being reassessed at this new number. Could go up. By all indications, it will go up. There are rarely any that go down unless we are in economically bad times.
Unless they cut timber off a track or something like that.
And it could be that the property's failing, So anyway, my point being, your constituents should see that very soon, next 3 weeks. And that's one point I wanted to make. I know Mr. Dahl and I have talked about it. y'all have to, then Mr. Willis will be doing his assessor hearings, which is where we ask that the county help set up the meeting space and telephone number for the citizens to call up and say, hey, I want to challenge this. Oh, I don't want to necessarily challenge it. I just want to come in and ask questions about it. And it's generally been Randy or one of his associates, and they are very good at meeting with our constituents. If you recall, this was in 21, height of COVID. They met with constituents on telephone conferences, Zoom meetings, in-person meetings. I think some of them even stopped them in the road, and they had a meeting through the window.
And I want to mention, too, the phone calls worked out well, and a lot of people thanked us for doing the appeal by phone, but not even considering COVID, just so they wouldn't have to get out and come to an informal hearing.
And so
we'll do it any way they want to do it.
So we need to obviously be leaning forward on that. Those hearings are just around the corner. They'll be effectively the first 2 weeks. They have a requirement to meet not less than 2 full weeks, 10 calendar days, and more if there's a need. Their work last time in 21 was not challenged very much. We had, Ms. Lease might remember, put her on the spot, but probably less than 10 hearings.
80% of the appeals that I had previously were citizens on fixed incomes.
And by and large, at least half of the appeals in the past have been people that are questioning and not being high enough. You know, those are the neighbors that are getting ready to sell their house, so they want that assessment.
Yeah, the opinion of value depends on its purpose. If it's for taxes, it's one number. Yeah. If it's for sale, it's a different number.
So a lot of that coverage in the news.
Yeah. I've said that forever.
And I'll ask y'all also, and I know Mr. Dahl, and I've spoken to it, lean forward on your Board of Equalization, which is a requirement we have to have. It has to start meeting in January. And you got to chase down all the circuit court judges to get their signature. As we have learned in the past, it's not as simple as just racing over and getting Ms. Treadway to get air circuit court judge. Every judge in the circuit has to sign that appointment order. So we know BOA should be, and I know a few of the members have expressed that they may not be prepared to do it this year.
Yeah, that's one good thing, you know, as we were talking about kind of internally, you know, I don't think that we've got the individuals that to fill the spots for the Board of Equalization. So if you all know of anyone that may be interested, please, you know, have them put their hats, have put their applications in for being a part of that.
Builders, lenders, farmers,
realtors. Could we reach out to the three that we just did not put on the Board of Zoning Appeals and see if they, because they're all engineers and builders and things of that nature.
Great point.
We might be able to say, hey, we didn't put you here, but could you possibly do this?
Okay. You already did it.
Building code, whichever code we're talking about.
Just plant the seeds, y'all be leaning forward. We know it's been really good times with regard to real estate. I don't feel like our public will have a great outcry. Everyone knows it's cost more to buy property, to rent property. The only real great outcries we've had is when boards decided to defer reassessments for up to 4 years, and gosh, the one from 07 to 13,
our
6 years,
one.
We had 450 appeals.
Wow.
And that put, you almost had to have full-time staff to deal with BOE requirements. So I think what you're doing is the right thing. I look very forward to Mr. Willis's numbers. I'll get them to the county administrator as quickly as I can so y'all begin to plan. And they will be massaged through the through the assessor hearings, and I'll get them to you. BOE, their changes, their decisions are very formal, but they're usually really small, limited. And we don't wait on the budgeting process for that to happen. So
I was at, actually, before they came up, the Board of Equalization, I was going to ask. So you have your hearings
and former
first,
appeals.
Right, the appeals, and then the BOE.
Correct. correct?
That's
right. Yeah, that's right, Mr. Fairchild. The process is pretty simple. You get your assessment notice. It says if you'd like to question it, challenge it, learn more about it, please call this number, set up an appointment through the assessor of records. So they get to meet with the folks that did the work, that assigned the new number. And again, they are there for at least 2 weeks if no one shows up, and longer if they have a requirement.
Yep, we want to talk to anyone that that has a question.
Then you have a second level of appeal. So if you came in and said, I think you got this one wrong, explain it to me, and it does, and maybe makes an adjustment or not, you may not be completely happy with it. Your second level of appeal is to the Board of Equalization.
Which needs to be on.
And then there is a third level of appeal, and that's the circuit court. And that's only been done once. It was a big surprise it was actually done. But there are three levels of appeal, and the commissioner's office kind of sits there as the honest broker. I don't have too much issue with the assessors because they do it every day. Sometimes the BOE will make a decision that they have to explain, that it has to be a justification for it. So we help them. Mr. Willis and them have been exceptionally good working with BOE for the difficult cases. There have been a few. Anyway.
And our numbers are based on the characteristics that we are aware of.
When do we start going to every other year?
When we went to 6, it was so bad when it was 6, we just said, he came to us and
said, if you have a population of under 50,000 in any particular county, the code allows you to defer reassessments for up to 6 years, but you must at the 6th year. We did at that time, and it was a 34% increase in. Actually, it's a 34% decrease because 2007 we set it.
And property values.
And property values were set.
Oh, yeah, values decrease.
2007, remember, we did it in 02, 03, 02, 05, and 07, because it was really good years. Mm-hmm. Properties were selling like crazy, and Lake was building out. And 07,
creative lending.
Yeah, creative lending. You know, you want $200,000, we'll loan you $230,000 because you might need a car.
And when we talk about the electric.
The utilities. And I'll speak to that, but briefly. So in 07, there was a high water mark for the assessment, and the economy changed. Things started to decrease. Insurance rates went up. And from 07, the pricing went down on the actual sales, but the assessment stayed the same. It was really a bleak time because we were 33% over-assessed, and you know, the tax rate can be lowered because you got a lot of extra revenue coming, and it was. The way you really got hurt were the citizens that were selling properties, because you sell, you pay taxes on sales, grantor taxes. And that's based on one of two figures, the actual sale of the property or the assessment. So if you had assessed at 300, but you got 225, whichever is greater. Thank you, sir. So it was tough. Other big, big issue is utility ratio. Our utilities pay taxes just like our citizens, same rate, 87 cents per real estate, you know, and 230 on personal property. They have one break, and they only pay based on what the sale to assessment ratio is. Right now, we are down in the 80s. We're property selling for, at this point, based on what the SEC said, about 12% below, property selling 12% above what we have assessed. So right now, our public utilities, which normally we get about $5 million from, a little less, only paying at 88% of that, 87.3 to be exact. They don't pay 100%. And as we get further apart from the individual assessment and the sale price, that goes down. And again, we were in 2011 and 12 getting more than 30% less from our utilities than we should have, because they didn't have to pay except based on. So doing it every 2 years, even every year. Their neighbors do it every year, but it's costly to do that. You'd have to have usually onboard staff, et cetera. We stay close to that. So we're going to go from something in the mid-80s, close with their work for 23, we should jump back up to about a 98-99%.
To answer Mr. Fairchild's question, though, after 2013, we started that cycle. Yeah.
2013, I beg the board.
An administrative assessment and then a full assessment.
Gotcha.
So that this is a full assessment, the next one's an administrative assessment.
And truly, it's a board's call. You know, we implement y'all's decision, and it was a very good decision that you've maintained.
And, then, and even just from a public perception standpoint, when the tax rate had to go from 59 cents up to, what did it go up to, 70 or something?
It went up in the 80s.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And we had about a 20% tax increase.
We didn't change, you know, that's not changing the rate. Yeah. That's just making it equalized. Yeah. It's what everybody didn't understand it as equal.
It hammered the folks that were selling. If you were a grantor or grantee, you pay tax to the circuit court.
But I will note that housing prices, at least around the lake, are just now above what they were in 2012. I mean, you know, maybe 15%. Yeah.
You know, the market was very stagnant from 2008 through about 2017.
Yeah.
It started picking up in 18.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's been on a roll ever since.
You talked about the 1,100 square foot house in 2005. I bought one in 1992. Sold it in 2005. I bought it for 80. Sold it for 190.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Well, I mean, it was on the market for one day.
That's pretty good.
But that was at the height of the market.
Right. Yeah. Well, and even with interest rates on my street, two houses, both waterfronts, sold before ever hitting the market.
Yeah, they were competitive bids. You know, if you're a realtor, it was the best of times. You know, you had competitive bidding.
All right. I ain't trying to cut us off, but we got to eat dinner before we come back to our planning thing.
But November 2nd, I will plan to be here and share some numbers.
Thank you so much. It's always good to see you because you're always going to come here and make our lives easier. Whether it's up or down, at least we know we're in the ballpark.
Right.
It's not like that first time. I'll never forget that when we did it in 2013. All of a sudden, our first year, we get smacked and it goes, hey, you got to raise taxes 20-something
percent. Doing mass appraisal is not a perfect world. You know, anybody knows that. And it's based on the characteristics that we are aware of.
Thank you so much. Is there any other questions? All right, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Good to see all of you.
You also.
Okay.
All right, next up is consent agenda, F, minutes of September 21, 2022. G, CRMF, IT, FUSD, network cabling, Mr. Notman. H, CRMF PW23-005-FY22 Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund Request Form PW22-009, Mr. Kreischer. I, Permanent Part-Time Deputy Registrar Job Description, Ms. Snow. J, Department of Social Services Vehicle Contract, Ms. Allen. K, Dewberry Project Agreement Number 15 for On-Call Water and Sewer Plan Review, Ms. Allen. Anything we want to pull from the consent agenda? Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We got to go to a closed session right now.
We can finish.
Okay.
New business, just a quick new
business. All right. Unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business from anyone? Okay, new business. Mr. Dahl, I know you had something you want to talk about.
Yeah, like I said, we added to the agenda. So the cost of the community services. So one, there's a study that can be done. Me and Ms. Harris have been doing some work. And again, we don't have any information to share, but I guess I know there's some discussion at the last board meeting, and there's been some emails discussing this. I guess I just want to know, does the board want us to kind of move forward with doing something, and to what degree? So I can tell you that there are some things that are actually studies where you get a firm that does the study to get the information. And to go more complex than that, it pulls a lot of financial data, residential numbers, all that. Through some of the information that we've pulled, there have been existing studies that have been done in Virginia for some different counties. I think one of them, the most recent one, was 2018.
Clark County.
Yeah, Clark County. But then there's some that are older, which kind of gives some numbers, preliminary numbers for what you all are looking for. I guess we're just wondering, how deep do you want us to dive into this? Yeah,
I think a couple of years ago, or not a couple of years, maybe a year or so ago, I forwarded kind of a spreadsheet that allowed you to plug in some numbers so you could calculate the cost of new housing developments. And, you know, that was sort of a proper calculation spreadsheet, for lack of a better word, but could be used in the same. I can go back and look for that. I personally am not looking for a study to be done by the county.
Okay.
I don't think we need to spend that kind of money.
So I mean, we can definitely pull the information, because I can tell you, so we've pulled through one, it's called the American Farmland Trust.
Yep.
There was also some information and studies done by the University of New Hampshire Cooperative Extension, one through the Penn State Cooperative Extension, and then also the Weldon Cooper Center in Virginia also did a study for Clark County in 2018. So it also references back some of the numbers for residential, showing, you know, what the cost ratio is for residential versus commercial, and then just open space and ag land. So
you would think VACO and NACO might have
some. Well, and like I said, we haven't reached out to them. I mean, we were trying to just pull some additional information.
Tell me what you're studying. Put it in. Tell me what are we trying to get at?
Well, I think the big question from some of the discussion is does residential development cost the county more than some of the others?
I sent an article. You sent out, I think that I sent you an article.
When did you send it to me?
Yesterday.
Did you send it to all of us?
Again, I told him to send it out to you.
I didn't get an email from you.
Yeah, this is it right here. It's 24 pages. And it's a study that was done in 2021. Housing is critical infrastructure, social and economic benefits of building more houses. Done by Rosen Consulting Company.
All right. I think the question that he's kind of asking right now is, how deep do we want to go? Because y'all got your end of the year audit coming up, correct?
We are. I mean, if you want us to do this big deep dive into a study, we can do it. But we've got our audit coming up in 3 weeks, and so it would.
That's why I asked you the question. I mean, the article I'll send it back to you.
Okay.
It's a link.
Well, I think it's just sort of a philosophical discussion between Chris and myself more than anybody else.
And but that's what I want to know. What is the bottom line? What are we trying to get at?
I mean, in my opinion, I think it's also important for the community to be aware, because the argument is always, you know, housing costs, so therefore we shouldn't have housing. But it's a very complicated subject. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on the demographics of the community. It depends on the existing economies of scale within that community. So it depends on all these different things.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, if we look at it and we say, if all counties looked at it, in my opinion, and said, hey, it's a net negative, then all counties would essentially be trying to not grow at any level. And that's sort of counter to what actually happens in terms of demographics. We're still growing as a nation, so you know, it's a worthwhile discussion. And certainly, when you're looking at larger developments, it is important to understand that, especially now that proffers can be put on the table, you know, to understand what we should be really asking out of developers, and you know, to help offset the costs. But at the end of the day, those costs are to new homes in relationship to what's
coming in. So I've got four documents I got four documents that I could send to the board that we found. It's called Cost of Community Services Studies, and it just deals specifically with this. And I think these give a lot of good info. I mean, if I send that to you, could you all give me an idea if that's something you want to kind of present out into the public in a board meeting, if that provides what you need. I mean, it's definitely not going to have Fluvanna's numbers in it, but it definitely gives some comparative counties, and it just shows trends of from residential to commercial to just, you know, agricultural. So maybe I'll do that first, just so you all can kind of take a look and see if that's something what you want. And if we need to go deeper into it, we can certainly do that.
So, to my mind, it's there's hard items and there's soft items. And doesn't that those two titles don't make one less significant than the other. But where the term hard numbers comes from, there's some pretty hard numbers there that are somewhat foundational that would at least be, and in my mind, it's how deep do you want to go, but there are some fairly foundational items that data that we could say this minus or plus that with a few lines down is the start. Even if you were to go through 20 pages of data, some of those hard items, you know, how much are our average expenses and what's our income or not income, what
revenues, expenditures. I went through this one workbook. It's a pretty deep dive to get the information. I mean, we can do it. It's just
My thing is, what's the bottom? What's the question? What's the bottom line? What are we looking for? And then, what questions do we have to ask? And where do we go to find the answer to that and a conclusion? Otherwise, we're just talking and batting here and there. It has to be some structure to what we're looking for and what we're trying
to do. I think that's the question he's asking is, and I think the suggestion that he made of sending us the information. Do we want to stop some of the other things that we've got going on right now and work on this, or do we want to get as much information as we can and things that we can look at on our own?
Yeah.
And then if we want to get into this, and I've actually said this to Mr. Gall tonight, this could be a topic we have at a retreat next summer.
Yeah.
I mean, or right after we finish the budget season, something of that nature. You know we're growing, we know. What are the effects of the decisions that we make, I guess, is the best
I think some of these existing studies and the documents from some of these universities and the American Farmland Trust and Welland Cooper, I think the context of it will give you some clarity on kind of, I think, some of the information you're looking for. And again, reading through some of it, I know it's not perfect and there's some back and forth. I mean, you know, again, some of these kind of come from, again, the Cooperative Extension, American Farmland Trust, and not to say that the information is skewed in one way or another, but again, these were just some of the initial studies and some of the information that we found. I think it's valid information, but I think it would be good for the board to see, and then we can determine
do we need to go further.
I think right now, I think I've seen head nods say, if we got the information, give us a chance to go over it and look at it, and then come back and discuss it later, we'd be in good shape.
And I'm just trying to understand staff's suggestion. I hear you about get the information and study it. Are we saying wait for some period of time into next year without? And it's kind of a two-part question. Are you saying that kind of the 30,000, that there's not really a 30,000 foot that's easy, fairly quick to obtain, that you feel it has to go
for,
to the
for depth? Savannah?
Yeah.
No, I mean, going through this Penn State workbook thing that they had, I mean, it's a, I'll send it to you. I mean, because the workbook's called, what's it called?
It's a Penn State, I'll tell you right now.
But there's no initial, you're saying there's no way to come to a 30,000 foot number without going to the depth that Penn State.
No, but the information in all these studies gives you the 30,000 foot number on average across Virginia and the nation and things like that. How residential fares versus commercial versus ag. I mean, you have solid information there. It just, it's not Fluvanna specific, but it tells you.
What do you do with
yeah.
it?
It's a leverage you pull, right? I mean, we're going to see an assessment. We have an opportunity to raise taxes or lower taxes or equalize, you know, based on the assessment that's coming out. We may have new businesses that come in. So, you know, does that mean that just because our tax rate went down that the overall cost, if you would, went down with it? Not necessarily, right?
We can have this discussion for a long time right now.
I know, we're short on time.
We're just getting to where we got to look at it. And my biggest fear, when you start talking about numbers, I know I've said this a long time, anytime you listen to anybody talk, and I hate to use the word politically, but on television, you can make numbers say what you want to make numbers say at times. And that's why it would have to, there's not going to be one perfect unless we decide to spend $100,000 and go do one.
I don't know how much it is, but again, I'll send the board the documents as a first glance, and if you don't think that has really what you're looking for from just a high-level overview, I mean, we can certainly drill down and you know, get more Fluvanna specific information.
So let me just say, I don't want to be disruptive to all the other things y'all have going on, and I just say this as the person who suggested that we get to some numbers here. I do think at some point it's good for a government to understand what those numbers are and how the things we read relate to
how our decisions affect what what we have, the other decisions we have to make.
Because fiscal responsibility is whatever massive responsibility we have as a board, so we should have a fiscal understanding of the impacts.
Correct.
Yeah. So I just want to be sure, however far it is out, that we do come back to where we apply that, not just within the individual understandings we all read it and we go on with life, we bring that back to some understanding of how to apply it to Fluvanna.
And again, we're still reaching out to, I mean, again, this is this kind of preliminary to see if there's maybe an easier formula and easier methodology. These were just at first glance some things. We're still waiting to hear from some. So we'll send some information and we'll definitely keep you updated. And if there's something more you want to see, we'll definitely get there.
Okay, and I'm not trying to cut you off, Mr. Dahl, we got to do the public comment, correct?
Well, that's the way it is.
All right, now we'll now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board, please state your name, address, keep your comments 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wish to speak at this time? Seeing none inside, is there anyone online?
Nope.
Seeing none online, I will now close the second round of public comment. And do we have a closed session?
Mr. Chair, I move the County Board of Supervisors entering into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A10 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing public safety, structure of emergency services.
Do I have a second? Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're now in closed session. All righty, Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We're now out of closed session. Next up is our public hearing tonight. Public hearing for Chapter 21, Water and Sewage Disposal Ordinance. Mr. Dahl.
So we're going to do a little bit of a little rehash. We don't want to spend a lot of time on some stuff that you saw, but we're going to probably dig a little deeper into some of the rates and fees. So before you, is basically to repeal the existing Chapter 21 and to then reenact a new Chapter 21. So I'll have a brief presentation. Then we have Richard Kinchlow with Dewberry Engineers. He's here to kind of just skim over what the board saw back in May, which is kind of just the Master Water and Sewer Plan update, which is kind of the basis for kind of coming into how we're coming to the new ordinances and the rates and fees and all that. And then Ms. Hoffman from Fred's office and Mr. Popowitz, the three of them have really been working on a lot of the ordinance pieces themselves, all the accompanying documents and everything. So if there's any specific or technical questions, they can certainly answer those, but we will get moving with the public hearing for the Chapter 21 Water and Sewage Disposal Ordinance. So again, just as we talked about before, Fluvanna County has targeted Zion's Crossroads as a growth area. The water and sewer system infrastructure is an important aspect to attracting business there. you know, everyone knows where the system is. It, you know, runs exactly 4 miles on 250 and Route 15. And the service area stretches from Route 698 Memory Lane back to 250 and Zion's Crossroads, and then about a half mile south on Route 15. You know, we also have other systems too. This whole ordinance, one, it's because one piece is we need this new ordinance in place because we have a new water and sewer system in place, and we need this to be able to hook up people. But in addition, this water and sewer ordinance also affects some of our existing systems, the Palmyra sewer system, and to a degree, there's references to the Fourth Union Sanitary District, but because the Fourth Union Sanitary District has its own chapter in the ordinance, there are certain things that apply and don't apply. But again, this ordinance is for Fluvanna water and sewer overall. So the proposed ordinance changes, fees, manual, and plans have been prepared to address significant increases in the county's ability for water and sewer systems. A lot of these revisions were made because there were some code changes in the Virginia Administrative Code for Waterworks regulations. And really, one, two, the proposed reenactment of Chapter 21, it also includes other additional documents. It includes Appendix A, which is the water and sewer fee schedule. You know, what is the amount to hook up to the system? What is the amount for rates? You know, there's lots of technical pieces in there. It really spells out, you know, the fees for hooking up the systems. There's also our required cross-connection control and backflow prevention program manual. That's more of a technical document. Emergency management plan for extended outages, again, more of a technical document. And then the utility standards manual that says, this is the, if you're a developer or you're a builder, this is how you hook into the system. This is the type of pipe you need. These are the valves. This is how it goes in the ground. This is, you know, all that technical engineering related specs. So before the board saw this chart before last time that we brought this forward. And so again, this is just looking at what our fees would be based upon let me move this. Our draft water and sewer rates. So again, we utilize the utility standards manual and the master plan update to come up with the information to base this on. As part of the rates that are being proposed, right now we've got existing rates for the Fourth Union Sanitary District for water, and we have an existing rate in place for the Palmyra sewer system. So instead of saying, okay, well, let's make these rates all different, we're making one consolidated countywide rate. So the rates are similar if you're on Zion's Crossroads, if you're on Fourth Union Sanitary District, or if you're on the Palmyra sewer system. They're going to be countywide rates. So that's, we utilize existing rates as the basis for rates for Zion's Crossroads. So that just kind of looks at the draft water and sewer rates. And again, it just gives estimates, you know. These charts here, I'm not going to go too much into them, but again, you know, we have proposed an $8,500 connection fee for water and an $8,500 connection fee, or it's also called availability fee for sewer. And I'll show you some charts with that. And then again, depending on the size of connection you need, the bigger size of connection you need, the more water you're going to get out of our system. Obviously, there's an increase in what that connection fee is from a water and sewer standpoint. So this just kind of shows the availability fees. Down below shows examples of water and sewer charges and fees based upon those different lines. Again, if I remember correctly, at 2,000 gallons in the base fee is what is included. If you go above that, then there's additional amounts that a user must pay above and beyond that. So we showed this to the board last time. So again, this is current rate. So again, as I just spoke, for Fluvanna, we're proposing 85 and 8,500. So the total of that is 17,000. Whereas for Louisa, for instance, sorry, I got some information here. Whereas for Louisa, for instance, for for their commercial customers or a line of that size, they're 12,000. They're 5,250 for water and 6,750 for sewer. Goochland, for instance, 7,900. Albrough County's 13,470. The one interesting thing for both Louise and Goochland on residential, they have different rates, different connection fees for residential. When I was going through and looking, actually, I can't remember which one it is. I think Louisa was actually lower for their residential hookups, whereas Goochland was higher for their residential hookups for the same 5/8 inch line. So again, this just kind of compares, depending on what size line someone would hook up to, this just shows what the connection fee is and kind of what our neighbors are compared to and what their comparative fees are. So last time the board asked, well, you know, why are some of Fluvanna's rates and fees higher? And I'll talk specifically about Goochland and Louisa. And then too, we'll also have Richard kind of chime in on some of this when he gives his kind of part of the presentation, and he's got some more counties that to compare to. So one for Louisa County pays in money, provides a contribution to the Louisa County Water Authority, an operational subsidy, so to speak, for their system, so they're able to keep their water rates lower because they provide dollars into that system. In addition, Louisa County also at times will provide capital funds into their water and sewer system. So really, when you look at availability fees and water and sewer rates, availability fees are the funds you collect from a capital standpoint for how you're going to build the system. The water and sewer rates, you use those fees to augment what you're doing to just operate and maintain the system. So those are the kind of two key differences. Goochland County, on the other hand, they don't necessarily provide a subsidy from county dollars, but they have what's called the Tuckahoe Service Creek District, where if you are in that area, you pay an extra 30 cents on your tax rate for being in that area. So for instance, for Fork Union, with it being set up as a sanitary district, the board could implement a separate and in addition tax rate on the Fork Union Sanitary District. The board has always been against that up to this point. So when you're talking about Louise and Goochland, why can they have a little lower availability fees and rates? Those are a couple reasons. Well, in addition to, both of those systems have been in place for a lot longer than Fluvanna is. We're behind the game on getting water and sewer situated and getting it implemented. It costs more money now that we've waited, and plus we just don't have as much capacity in the initial forefront too as we move forward. So talking about water and sewer rates and some of the differences, those are some of them. So again, as you look here, you know, standard 1-inch line, you know, although we are not just used this 1-inch line, we're showing 34,000 for a connection, whereas Louise is 24,000. You know, a $10,000, you know, for maybe a homeowner, that's a significant difference. But from a business going in, there is a lot of other factors that they're going to look at when they decide to bring their business to Fluvanna County. They're just not basing it on what's my connection fee. It's going to be on what's my taxes. Do I have a B-pole? Do I have, you know, any type of other taxes that are implemented for the county? They're going to look at everything holistically. Now, once you get to some of these larger lines, as you see, we are, you know, a good bit more than some of our competitors. The one thing I would say that as a benefit for that, we don't have a lot of initial capacity to begin with at Zions Crossroad. We only have 75,000 gallons per day. And so if we just got a big water user up front, that would eat into all of our capacity, and that would prohibit any other users from coming in to hook up. So I think having initially right now, having some a little more robust, I'll call them water and sewer availability fees, is not necessarily a bad thing. Once we get more systems online and we're moving forward, again, we can look at these water and sewer rates and availability fees, and we can change them via ordinance at any time that the board chooses. So that just kind of looks at our water and sewer availability fees. And then there's also a discussion of typical charges. Again, our rates may be higher, but every county or every authority has different base charges. Some may say you get 1,000 gallons per month with this base charge, and ours you're getting 2,000 gallons per month in the base charge. So using the same four localities as a comparison, these are just some typical charges for the different size lines. And again, you know, we're not, from a monthly amount, we're not any different. And from a large commercial user going into Zion's Crossroads, they're not necessarily going to potentially balk at maybe that we're $50, you know, more, or, well, one, $40 more expensive than Overall County. That's not going to be a deal killer from a large commercial user. Again, we're trying to be competitive, but you know, we also want to cover our costs as well. And then once we get to Richard's presentation, he's going to go a lot into, you know, our considerations, how we came up with the costs, and kind of why we are where we are. And there's other counties that we've got comparisons for as well. So that's just kind of my initial piece from just a high-level overview. What I think we'll do, we'll have Richard come up and we'll have him go through his presentation, and then we can kind of go through that. If you have questions at any point, please feel free to ask, or we can have questions at the end. Then after we do that, we have to do a public hearing, and then, you know, we can have answer more questions that the board may have. So Richard, you want to come on up? And
so as Eric said, the first portion of the presentation will be a brief overview of what we talked about back in May. Again, as a reminder, the purpose was to provide Levanna County and its Public Works Department a roadmap for planning its improvements, upgrades, extensions, expansions to meet future needs while maintaining cost-effective water and sewer service for a growing number of county customers. So on the next slide, we kind of have an infographic to kind of show everything that went into the master plan, the different components of the master plan, project identification. In addition to the master plan, so we've identified improvements that are capacity driven based on the projected population increases. We did a condition assessment with an asset management plan to identify projects that are needed to keep the 4-unit sanitation district up and running. And then we basically took those costs that were identified, put it all nice and neatly into a capacity fee analysis so we can figure out what the rates need to be to meet those specific goals, which we'll touch back on again in the next section. So starting in the 4-unit sanitation district, if you go to the next slide, we've got some photos from the condition assessment. This slide and the next slide both include some of those. We essentially came up with an itemized list for each facility, provided a cost estimate, prioritized those improvements based on the overall impacts. These are some of the scoring criteria that we use to do that analysis, and essentially you combine the likelihood of failure, consequence of failure criteria, which give you an overall rating. Those with the highest rating are the ones that need to be addressed most quickly. On the next slide, we also looked at the linear infrastructure of the existing system to identify potential vulnerabilities in the system. So the red areas that you see would be areas where you'd want to have some additional redundancy, or at the very least, a plan to reestablish service in case of an outage, which could be caused by a break or damage to the system. On the next slide.
And remember, this, just kind of go back, this information is more specific to the 4-unit Sanitary District and Palmyra Sewer right now.
So this is an overall map. So that was sort of the asset management condition assessment piece. Going into the master plan, this sort of shows in relation to FUSD where the Palmyra system lies, which is all on the left there. On the next slide, it shows a graph that essentially looks at the population projections, demand projections, compared to what capacity is currently available with the well system versus what would be available with a regional water treatment plant, which is proposed in the master plan.
And when he talks about the regional water supply, that's really some of the Dominion money for the big water system in the Fort Union Sanitary District.
Correct. And when we get into the rate analysis, I don't think I have it in the presentation, but the vast majority of the water improvements for the Fort Union Sanitation District were covered by those Dominion funds, at least what's included in the plan currently. So these are some of the improvements that are proposed in the central area. So again, Fort Union and Palmyra, mainly waterline extensions. We do propose a central regional water treatment plant, which will pull water from the James River through the James River Water Authority, convey it to a central location. We have a few different areas that we've identified as potential locations, so there's nothing pinpointed or specific about those locations, but generally speaking, the intent is to locate the water treatment plant more centrally to the system so that it can feed the system and minimize some of those improvements that are needed. We do show probably the largest area for potential development is at the industrial park, so ideally locating the water treatment plant near the industrial park where you're co-locating your major demands with your treatment gives you the best bang for your buck. We also have an additional elevated storage tank proposed, as well as some raw water infrastructure. For Dominion, we did show sort of a quote master plan level project that goes a loop in that southern end of the system, but there are additional dollars that were sort of earmarked within our financial analysis to go towards other extensions that may or may not be shown in the master plan. On the sewer side, we've got a few decentralized treatment facilities on the small end, and then the Palmyra system that's more of a central system. The next slide again highlights the capacity aspect from a treatment capacity. Without the water supply and the treatment, that's really what's going to limit your development. So those are the two most critical pieces, and then how we get the water to the customers and the waste back from the customers is a little bit easier of a puzzle to solve. But these are by far the most critical aspects, obtaining the nutrient load allocation and the permitting required to withdraw water and then discharge treated water. Next slide. This again highlights the improvements. Again, at the industrial park area, we're co-locating the treatment facility with that large discharge area. Alternatively, up in the Carysbrook area, we have a potential area shown for ideal locations for treatment facilities. We've not gone through the effort to site those at this time. Those are just from a planning perspective areas to consider moving forward.
And again, when we're looking at this, just for the board standpoint, you know, we're not talking, this is like a 35-year,
correct,
35-year look down the road at that, looking from a population standpoint, you know, growth, things that we know that are coming up and things that we already have planned, and also takes into account replacing existing infrastructure that's already there as well. So
correct. And in each time step, there's a capacity that's associated with the improvement. So if you see a development that's occurring more rapidly than the plan shows, the plan can be adjusted to accommodate that as well. Switching gears, focusing more on the Zion Crossroads system. Again, the existing system, like Eric said, it's about 4 miles along 250, generally between 15 and the DOC. A little bit further down to include Memory Lane. Next slide.
And then we have this little planned western extension too that's kind of already been designed, just waiting on finding out on funding for that.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think the star of the master plan really is the treatment capacities both on water and sewer in both the Zion Crossroads and the central FUSD Palmyra systems. So this graph shows the projected demand compared to the different supplies and what their respective capacities include. Essentially showing the need once James River comes online, the Louisiana Water Authority supply is adequate for, based on the demand projections out past 2030, and then at some point in the future, an additional treatment capacity will be needed to meet those future demands.
So clearly, that's both the Louisiana and Fluvanna side.
No, this is Fluvanna specific.
Okay.
But what do we get from this?
Yeah, I mean, because remember, originally, we've got an original agreement where, one, we're getting 75,000 gallons per day as it stands right now. With Louisa, with agreement we have, we can get up to 400,000 gallons per day from their system. Again, we would have to pay for the water that is treated water, mm-hmm. the treated portion of the water. And then after that 400,000, we're really capped off at that point once the James River Water Authority is in place. And at that point, we're going to have to look at, well, you know, does it make more sense to provide some capital to Louisa County to expand their plant a little bit, which means we get more water? Does it make more sense to potentially build a water treatment plant at some other location and we treat our own water and we're not having to pay Louisa County for the treatment of our water, so to speak. So
if we're capped at 400,000, then how is it that the LCWA supply reaches up to 2 million almost?
That's the first tier. So that includes the improvements to their treatment facility.
Yeah. So they talked about adding a tank to their facility.
Yeah, you could add something to theirs. I mean, again, we could get up to 400,000, but to get to meet the demand projections, we would have to put some capital improvements in there.
But the supply would still be from the Water Authority.
I see what you're saying.
Until we get pipes in the ground.
Now, and then technically, right now, the permit from James River is for 2 million expandable up to 6 million.
No, it's the initials. Gosh, I always forget that. I can't remember if it's 6 million or 8 million is the initial combined tier one.
Six initially.
I think it's 6 million initially, then Fluvanna and Louisa get, you know, 3 million gallons per day. Uh-huh. We can use that in Fork Union, we can use it at Zion's Crossroads, wherever.
Right.
And so, again, we've got different tiers and different timelines where we've got allocations for those amounts. I think it goes all the way up to 12 million, I think.
12 total, 6 and 6.
Yep. So, yeah.
So, but yes, this does include, since it exceeds the 400, it does include doing some improvements to Louisa's plant to meet the demand projections. So looking more from a conveyance perspective, we've shown some parallel lines for transmission capacity, which provides both operational relief as well as additional capacity needed to meet the future development as the system sort of grows from page right to page left, east to west. We also, again, show a general region where the water treatment plant ultimately that is shown at the end of the master plan could be constructed sort of for two reasons. One, it's closest to the raw water supply, so there's less raw water infrastructure needed to convey it further down to the alternative location shown at DOC, which is more central. Yes, thank you. And then also on the right-hand side in the blue dashed, that's a higher elevation area, so then it would take less energy to distribute that water throughout the system.
And again, these colored properties, as we were going through, you know, these are mostly vacant properties, and so it was really looking at properties and kind of knowing the status of where some of the property owners are from a development standpoint or where properties may develop. And so this is just kind of putting a best guess out there, educated guess on which properties and when they may develop and what that does for that area.
Gotcha. Yeah, so and like Eric said, the properties were developed. We met with the county, Public Works, utilities folks, and economic development planning as well. And then the red is the initial, purple midterm, blue long-term. We also did a comparative analysis to look at demand, average demand per acre for different municipalities in different stages of their growth. So the red have a slightly lower per acreage demand as they would be developed sooner, and then it steadily increases throughout the planning period. So purple is a medium density, and blue is relatively higher than the purple and the red, but generally not what would be considered a high density, just higher relative to. So similar for sewer, really starting at the existing wastewater pump station along 15, generally following 250 down to DOC. On the next slide, again, revisiting the capacity aspect, based on the demand projection, we approximated what treatment allocation would be needed and when the timing of those improvements, when they would be needed to meet that future growth.
And again, for this system up here, our best bet for sewer expansion is trying to work with the Department of Corrections and on their existing plan, because we've had conversations with them, and they would be open to looking at, you know, expanding their plan. The county would have to assist with that, and that's really kind of a key component. I mean, again, right now we've got 75,000 gallons per day water and 125,000 gallons per 125 or 100.
It's an additional 100,000. They could get an additional 25,000.
Thank you. Needed. Yep. But again, so we'll have that 400,000 gallons per day from Louisa once the James River Water Authority hooks up. But we have no extra sewer capacity. So the next real kind of key piece to this is really working on the sewer component up there. And again, too, you want to start planning out for the next additional water growth too, above 400,000. Because again, Louisa's 15 years in, and they're already using over about 500,000 gallons per day up at Zion's Crossroads.
Right.
So for sewer improvements, the main goal here was to try and make it as gravity focused as possible. So utilizing the existing landfall, limit energy costs long term, and also being very strategic about which developments can connect to the existing force main, because as more intermediately between the existing force main and the discharge point, the more locations that connect, the further reduced the capacity is that's available in that force main, sort of similar to the system overall. So we tried to lay it out in a very common sense approach, and again, focusing on the timing that we had discussed previously with county staff. So the fun part, the capacity fee and rate analysis. So I'll go over some of the assumptions that we had, some of the goals of the analysis, and then kind of go into different models that we ran and what those results look like. So the overall goal is to holistically analyze, not just for the system in a bubble, but countywide, making sure that we're looking at the fee structures, making things consistent across the different systems. I think one of the big things, we gave ourselves a deadline, so we said after 35 years, we wanted water and sewer funds to be financially sustainable, provide sufficient revenue for emergency, which comes into the revenue piece, which ultimately comes down to a level of comfort moving forward, ensure costs remain competitive in the region, which, as Eric said, there are nuances to that, so you have to be careful when comparing to the neighbors. But we do have a comparison to kind of where we fall, just looking at it in a vacuum there. Minimizing subsidies was a big piece of it. We wanted to have keep everything within the fund itself and not have as many external sources when possible. Again, setting rates now to meet future needs so we can hopefully avoid any fee hikes or rate hikes down the road. And also plan for preventative maintenance and recapitalization, because at some point all of the infrastructure will need to be replaced at some point in the future.
And so that's what this model does. It looks at everything going down 35 years and some of it even longer, saying we've got some existing pipes in the ground at Fork Union Sanitary District. Those have to be replaced at some point. Well, with this fee structure in place, instead of potentially having to take out debt at a later point, with the fee structure, it'll provide the capital there to be able to do those upgrades when they're needed. So,
so some key assumptions. We're assuming that the county is fully repaid within the planning period, which definitely adds to the cost. Private well and septic systems. So sort of a benchmark that we tried to look at was, okay, if a 1-inch meter customer were to come in and build their own on-site septic system with a well, what would that cost be? So based on some of the research that we did, assuming a $10,000 well drill and approximately $30,000 for a treatment system, sort of the goal was $40,000, which we came in at $37,000 total for that size, or $34,000 for that size meter, as sort of a back check. Like Eric had mentioned, we proposed rates to match the current rate, the countywide rate, to match what FSD is currently charging for water, and then what Palmyra is currently charging for sewer. The base fees assume 2,000 gallons usage, and then those fees are essentially the existing fees, I think, with a 2% increase.
And when you look at the 1-inch, that's not your typical household connection. Your typical household connection, what's it, the 5/8?
The 5/8 by 3/4.
5/8 by 3/4. And it's 1-inch is more of a small commercial user, so that's kind of the benchmark. So if you're looking at a one inch user, that's paying $40,000 if they wanted to do it on their own, versus I think it was $34,000. I mean, so that's just kind of the comparison.
So the projected revenue, we ran many scenarios. The four that we chose to summarize are on the screen. We did look at, okay, if we break even, so at the end of 35 years, we have $0 in the bank. Everything, the capital budget equals $0. The operation cost equals $0. What does that look like? That results in a water fee of about $17,422 just for water, and that is a 1-inch equivalent meter. So for our $40,000 example, that would actually be what the equivalent of two EMUs, or equivalent metering units, so that would be doubled just for water. The rates, you could be significantly reduced on a per 1,000 gallon basis. Again, that's in addition to the minimum charge. Sewer, also very high, $25,000. Rates for sewer per 1,000, again, with that minimum charge that was stated on the previous slide, $7.28. No subsidy, so we have a capital subsidy, which we can, as you can see later, some of the other models include that. That's money being taken out of the operations budget and being applied to the capital budget. To help balance that out.
Let me clarify that. When we say the operations budget, we're not talking about the county operations budget.
Okay.
Again, we've got capital dollars and we have operations dollars within the water system. So based upon where those rates are, some of the dollars from the operations can go in and subsidize the upgrades of capital. So we're not proposing county capital dollars to subsidize this, but we do have a scenario that'll address that too, because there was some discussion, not that the board said we want to subsidize that, but there is some discussion of, well, why are our rates higher, how could we be lower, and so those are some ways that it could be done.
Right.
So again, right here, just to connect, if you wanted both of those kind of pots of money to be separate and self-sustainable and equal to zero after 35 years, those are what the connection fees are. Again, we're proposing $8,500 and $8,500. It would need to be $17,400 and $25,200 if you want the capital to be equal to zero after 35 years. So you can see having the higher water and sewer rates helps to subsidize the capital. So that's that scenario number one.
And then, I guess, to add with scenario one, you would still be charging the $11.22 and the $17.65 in the Fork Union Sanitation District with a different rate structure as shown in scenario one in Zions Crossroads and more generally any other county-owned system if there ever were to be one. For scenario two, that's where we showed the 8,500 for each water and sewer connections and the 1,122 per 1,000 gallon for water rate, $17.65 per 1,000 gallons. In this particular scenario, and like Eric said, the way that each we have broken it down in water and sewer budgets separately, all under the water fund, and then the two columns in each of those are capital and operations. Respective to each other. On the water side, with scenario two, the operations budget is providing, again, within the water sewer budget, providing some assistance there with the 57%, and on the sewer, it's the 68%. With this model, at the end, total water and sewer revenue, it's about $93.2 million.
That's after 35 years.
After 35 years.
And I can tell you, too, in the model for, like, the first 15 years, and again, this is including saying we know we need to, we're amortizing out what some big fees and charges are going to be for replacing lines. So that's saying, you know, we're putting aside, like, almost $3 million a year for major upgrades down the road. And so this takes that into account. So we're not necessarily going to have to look at debt service or anything like that if we continue on this model. And again, the model is something that you'd look at an annual basis and kind of review it to make sure it's still doing what it needs to do.
Yes. And so these, and this model, I'll also mention, assumes it's less than 2% increase a year, which most municipalities are increasing at least 2% a year, if not more, because they're playing catch up, trying to balance the books. For scenario three, if we reduce the fees to the 5,700, 5,200, keeping the rates the same, we see a pretty significant reduction. Again, we're having to subsidize internal to the budget from operations to capital. You cut your overall revenue in about half, which essentially takes away from any unplanned improvements, any emergencies, etc. And again, that is still assuming county debt repayment. So I think that's probably the big takeaway. So everything that's paid in gets paid back to the county.
And again, all we did is, because we're Zion's Crossroads, these rates reflect what Louisa County's rates are right now. So we said we want our rates to be exactly the same as Louisa, the 5,750, the 6,250, and we're not recommending that, but that's what this model does, and if we mm-hmm. balance it on that.
And then the last scenario four, essentially identical to scenario three, with the difference being the debt, county debt is not repaid from what's been put into the system currently.
Yeah, so with this, I mean, again, you know, the big intent was to always get a system and not have it be subsidized by necessarily county tax dollars. For instance, the Fort Union Sanitary District, the charges and everything in the system pays for Fort Union Sanitary District. Paul Meyer Sewer is subsidized by the county by about $150,000 a year, but that's because a large majority of the connections on the Paul Meyer Sewer system are county facilities, schools, county buildings, things like that. So that system is subsidized. But if the county said, okay, we wanted to go along with the same water and sewer rates compared to Louisa, using the same connection fees similar to Louisa and same water and sewer rates, and we said, look, all the debt that we're paying, all the outstanding debt currently for Zion's Crossroads, Fork Union, Paul Myra Sewer, if we just say the county is going to not require repayment of that, that's what that does. And so, again, it changes the model even more. Again, from a staff standpoint, we're still recommending option scenario two.
So then comparing to the neighbors, and again, what this graphic doesn't include is any sort of context as to when the system was built, how much it costs, what the subsidy is on an annual basis, how much the counties or respective governmental bodies that are associated with some of these authorities may be paying in for capital improvements. But just looking at the proposed rates compared to the existing rates, you can see the proposed rates do fall on the higher end for water and sewer, but they're not the highest.
Rapidan Service Authority, that is Orange County, Greene County, and Madison County, they're a part of the Rapidan Service Authority, and they're 10,000 and 10,000. We're proposing 8,500 and 8,500. And again, we talked about how some of these others are lower. Some of these other authorities and localities are lower, but they also are providing some kind of subsidies into the system by some way, somehow. And not all of them. Again, we don't know the context of all of them. We know specifically on the Louise and Guthrie one.
Looks like Powhatan's sewer is more askew from the water than the rest of them. Any idea why that is?
Sewer costs more for one.
Yeah, generally speaking.
I'm just saying theirs is more out of whack with the water than the rest. I don't know. Just thinking, trying to. Okay.
Everybody else kind of mirrors itself.
Yeah,
and sometimes too, I mean, again, you know, you can get into a little bit of a numbers game a little bit, because sometimes you could have water and sewer rates exactly the same, and one may subsidize the other a little bit. You know, maybe in Powhatan's model, maybe they're looking at it from a, this is truly what it costs for the water standpoint, and this is truly what it costs from the sewer standpoint, and that's what the fees are going to be. So, again, with the numbers, there's a way to kind of balance them within the fund, so the system overall is self-sufficient.
I would say the other factor there, and I'm speaking off the record, I think that it's probably the number of customers as well plays into that. They have disproportionate numbers of customers on water versus sewer, where it's not one for one. I know that we helped them with their master plan a few years ago, and I believe the water system, a large portion is served from Chesterfield County, so that's more of a defined corridor. Where the sewer, there are a few decentralized systems as well.
In Richard's former life, he worked for a Department of Public Utilities next door to us.
I did. And then rate analysis, again, not... Well, on the water side. I did work in Richland. Yeah. And
I just heard a lot of stories. I'd like to catch up with you soon.
Yeah, sure. We'll see. We'll trade stories. Again, off the record.
Yeah.
So water and sewer. Water and sewer are both on the high end. On the sewer side, it is the highest out of the ones that were compared, at least on this graph. Second highest, but on the high end for water as well. And with rates, we're looking at it holistically. We discussed sort of the pros and cons of having different rate structures in different systems. I know for authorities are required to have the same rate structure, even if they're separate systems. So given a number of different factors, we felt that was the best, most consistent way to set those rates. Which were then reflecting the rate analysis.
And again, this is just basically looking at the rate. I mean, so this doesn't take into account that some of these may allow up to, you know, certain gallons.
Right.
But, you know, someone maybe allows 2,000 gallons or someone allows 1,000 gallons or something.
Yeah,
like
2, 3, and 4. So these are the rates above whatever the minimum charge is per 1,000 gallons.
Well, and isn't, to some degree, I mean, I understand that the comprehensive aspect of the entire proposal, but isn't it somewhat weighted by the fact that, you know, our initial water and connection system is going to be centered around Zion's Crossroads, and that we're buying treated water to start with?
Buying treated water is more expensive, generally speaking. So you're paying a premium because you're getting a finished product versus a raw product that you're paying the electric bill for, chemicals, you know.
But that is, of course, offset by the fact that we don't have the debt related to
correct, you
know, the plants that are necessary to treat the water.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting a good rate from the Department of Corrections, but we don't get very much quantity from it. So if we were getting, you know, a million gallons at $1.50 or something like that.
$1.50.
You know, that would probably be a pretty good deal for us, but again, it's limited.
Right, and it, again, there are a lot of factors that go into that. Typically, it is cheaper to build a plant over time, 50 years, build a plant, treat it yourself. There is a cost savings associated with it, but you have an initial capital investment that you have to make. If you're purchasing dollars at, you know, $5 per 1,000 gallons, that's expensive, those costs add up, and over time, it is more cost effective to build.
And your models assume that we will always buy that treated water up to the capacity of the existing stations, and that we would more likely partner with Louisa.
Right, so it does. We do switch sources, and the costs are associated with that in the different time steps. So it is in the master plan. There is in the out years a water treatment plant proposed in Zion Crossroads, like we had talked about with the two options. And in the master plan, there's a graphic that kind of shows a cost benefit analysis. So over time, what your initial capital investment is based on when your growth rate and how all that plays out, when does it make sense and when doesn't it make sense, what your break-even point is, essentially, which was part of the reason why we recommended doing the treatment plant. There's also other benefits, like you control your own water supply, that sort of thing. But the rate analysis from an operation standpoint does switch from you purchasing water at $5 and X cents a gallon, or per 1,000 gallons, to producing your own water. And we did include a placeholder for a much reduced placeholder for your own production costs. So recommendations, as Eric said, we had agreed essentially scenario two, so the 8,500 for water and sewer connections. For water rates, the $11.22, which would match the existing 14 and sanitation district rates plus a 2% increase. Per 1,000 gallons, in addition to the base fee, and then for sewer, the $17.65 per 1,000 gallons above the base fee. And then Eric has already mentioned this, but the big thing to keep in mind is this is something that should be reviewed annually. We've made assumptions in this analysis that you'll have a variety of meter sizes that are connecting. I did run a scenario if you only have the residential size meter or the residential equivalent, the revenue is different than if you have all 4-inch meters, equaling the same number of equivalent meter units. So there is, even within the analysis, it is a range. So adjust it annually. Make sure that the rates are not prohibiting any sort of growth. Make sure that they're tracking, at least with the analysis, like Eric said, the initial years, it takes time for the budget to become sustainable, but make sure you're on track and everything makes sense, and then make any adjustments accordingly based on the real data that you see as the system grows. That's all that I had.
Wow.
Let me tell you what, between Christina, Bobby, and Richard, I mean, from the ordinance to the master plan and the rate analysis, I mean, this has been a very, very lengthy process to go through all this. And the financial models that I was kind of getting in with Richard and Bobby on towards the end, I mean, there's a lot there to really kind of come up with these rates, and again, we're trying to make it a sustainable system that looks at the future, that can replace the future without necessarily having to have it be a county subsidized system.
That's awesome. Does it mean that we're no longer a teenager now? Or, I mean, we're a young adult.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome.
We've been waiting.
A long time.
Questions? Mm-hmm. I mean, he gave us four scenarios.
I mean, my opinion is that given the limited amount of land that we have, the relationship between the cost that we have with regard to other counties is going to be primarily offset by the fact that our land is going to be less expensive than what they were purchasing in other counties. So I don't really see that as being a negative drawback. And I, you know, of course we can adjust and change if we need to, but you know, to get started and as a as an objective and goal to be neutral in our operations and our capital needs is the way to go. So I mean, I don't know why we would try to save and compete, you know, with some of the other counties directly on the connection sewer rates after the start. That's my opinion. So I'm a fan of the recommended proposed fees and rates in scenario two.
Yeah. Mr. Fairchild?
I've got a few questions. So the hookup rates, you'll use another term than hookup.
You use connection fee or availability fee. They're kind of all interchangeable a little bit.
So the hard costs associated with the larger lines is, I'm assuming, nowhere near equivalent to the increase in cost as you go up to a bigger line. Is that right? In other words, I should have asked it earlier, but the chart that showed as you went up to larger size lines, like the jump
one of them
from
went up to like $400,000.
Oh yeah, you're, let me go to
the jump from the smallest to the next up was a lot of money.
Right there.
Yes. Well, I guess so. If when you went from the 17 to the 34.
Yep.
The cost, the hard cost difference between a 3/4 and a 1 is not that much difference in cost to the county, right?
No, again, I mean they're paying for the connection upgrades.
Yeah.
And so one, with that increased cost, they get more water. They're getting more of our water allocation.
You get a bigger piece of pie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I'm saying. For the allocation,
yeah.
But as far as more water, they're paying the rate per how many gallons?
Per 1,000 gallons.
Yeah, per 1,000 gallons.
Above the minimum, and the minimum does scale up as well.
And so they're, I'm just looking for clarity, and I think I do understand that jump from 3/4 to 1 inch is really, there's not that much difference in cost, hard cost to putting a line in the ground to this. Whoever that wants to tap between a 3/4 and a 1, it's really somewhat of a prohibitive. I'm trying to find the understanding of we're really jumping fees to be prohibitive to some extent because we don't want them taking too much of the water, but then they're a user of the water that we put up there to try to.
Yeah, we think around probably the 1 inch line is probably going to be for a lot of the. I mean, again, if you're looking at a standard office complex, you know, whatever warehouse or something like that, but Zion's Crossroads, that's going to probably be your typical connection up there, I would probably say. And so yes, I mean, is it to go from a. I guess if you want to say the 17,000 is for a home to hook up, say someone wanted to hook up a house,
yeah.
For 17,000 combined water and sewer versus here. No, I mean, it's not $17,000 more necessarily for the,
right,
to add the upsized pipe and stuff like that. But with the upsized pipe, you get additional benefit of having the capacity of the water. So you're paying for the water capacity too. And maybe Richard, you can.
Yeah. So what the math that's happening behind the scene here is there are ratios for each meter, and it's all respective back to that equivalent
this
metering
right
unit, which is the one, yes, those rates there. So if you do the math and you divide, like for Louisa, for example, their 4-inch meter cost by their equivalent, the 5/8 inch by 3/4 inch meter, those ratios are going to be about the same. So for 1 inch meter, for example, is equivalent to 2 5/8 inch by 3/4 meters, and that's from a capacity perspective. So with that size meter, based on essentially the number of fixtures you have, and it's not exactly double, but let's say you have 5 hose bibs for a regular 1 EMU 5/8 inch by 3/4 meter, you would have double that or 10 for the 1 inch meter, and then it kind of increases. So it's it's meant to proportionately adjust the both the capital, again, the piece of the pie example is a really good example. When you have a 4-inch meter, you're not getting 4 times a 1-inch meter. You're actually getting like 96 times a 1-inch meter because it's not a 1-to-1 ratio. But those were consistent across the board with other municipalities within.
And then if somebody's buying a 4-inch, presumably they're taking it somewhere else. Are there then connection fees to the individual properties? Let's say I'm putting a commercial park in. Is there still a connection fee for each individual building, or is that the fact that the developer bought the, say, the 1.5 or 2-inch pipe to service that park?
Right.
Is he responsible at that point?
So part of the ordinance, there are some things, and I can't remember what the term is. There's like a credit. So say, for instance, I want to build a development way down the road off Zion's Crossroads, and I run an extension line going back to my building that's going to be on the back part of the road. And so in the ordinance, it's written if there's additional properties or businesses that hook up to that line because they're putting in the capital up front, then that individual owner that put up the upfront money could then get an oversized credit going down the line for putting up the upfront capital in there.
So, and then in addition to that, if you have like, I don't know, you have a building with 6 bays in it or something, you could either install a 2-inch meter and then have off that 2-inch meter individual meters go to the buildings. The county's, the actual account that the landowner or the whoever's managing that building would have is with the county, and then how they meter and if they charge people on their side an additional fee is not part of these rates.
Yeah.
So they can divvy it up, they could do it proportionately, they could give them a flat fee. This wouldn't really apply beyond the county's meter, which is that master meter. Or if the person doing the development preferred, they could have 6 1-inch meters going to the same building that are with the county, and then whoever is occupying that building would have their own account with the county, and they would pay the county for that water directly. So it's a business case decision, but there wouldn't be multiple county meters to serve the same customer.
Would a subdivision be able to buy, say, the builder, a larger pipe and then put smaller pipes in the homes, the 3/4-inch typical home?
Yeah, they would run a larger main going up
to the subdivision.
Yeah, going up the road, and then there would be smaller lines coming off the trunk line going into, say, a house or something like that.
So that would be the contractor's responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That is
correct.
Right. For residential subdivisions, the contractor is typically the one purchasing those.
Yep.
Because they have to get building permits and everything before they can sell the home, and having water to the home is generally a requirement for the building permit. Typically, when we see master meter type situations, that would be an apartment complex, for example. Townhomes, you could kind of do it either way. Individual residential homes typically have their own meter with an account set up with the county directly. But the developer, the one building the home, is typically the one that covers those costs initially.
For the larger
developments that are being subdivided. And like Eric said, and typically if they're building a residential subdivision, for example, and they need to bring the water line further down, maybe Route 15, for example, or down 250, they're going to get credits based on their connection fees to get sort of, you know, credit for building that line. So they wouldn't be paying as much based on the agreements that we will discuss in the ordinance.
So if I'm building a development, say with 50 homes, and bring in a 2-inch or 3-inch pipeline, cost me $136,000, and then I'm gonna run 1-inch pipelines, the county will still put the meters in there, but there's not a connection fee to those homes. Is that the way I understand that?
No, there's a connection fee to each residence. And also, just to be clear, the oversized policies have to do with if we want something bigger than what is necessary to serve whatever they're doing, not if it's big because they need that much water in their community. They pay for that. That's just on them. But if we say, hey, we really want to get a little further down, can you build build it bigger to sustain us for longer, kind of in this vicinity, and we ask for that. That's when you get the credit.
Yeah, I mean, like for instance, say really going down this stretch of road, say they really only need like a 4-inch line or something like that, but we're like, you know what? Maybe we see something down the road that'll shoot off from the side. So we, you know, maybe the county says, look, we would really like to see you put in a 6-inch line going down there. So that's where, that's kind of what Christina was talking about in that scenario.
And the connection, and going back to my initial example, I understand that. Thank you. The connection fee is going to be the $8,500.
Yes, $85 and $85.
So even though you're running a bigger one and then you're splitting it out,
yes,
you're still paying that connection fee. So isn't that somewhat double dipping for the connection fee, though?
No. So someone would build the. I mean, let me see if I. So you're saying that someone just brings a trunk line going?
Yeah, you're
back?
You're not gonna. Let's say I'm. You know.
Come up.
Usually, what you're doing is if in a residential area, we're going to be building a water main to supply water. That's what they're going to do. And then along that, they'll say, okay, we've got 25 homes or 35 homes, and each one of these is going to have a connection fee. If they're putting in the water main, we don't have to do that. That's fine with me, because they're building the infrastructure that we need for our water main.
Gotcha. All right.
Yes, that's the difference.
Okay.
And then it's not going to be a 4-inch connector when they build the water main.
Yeah. No.
It'll just build off of it.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's more than the connection fee too. There's in the appendix A, there is different fees for different lengths of line and stuff like that as well.
I had heard recently that there was a residential developer, and it could just be hearsay, but there's a residential developer somewhere towards Zion's area around 250 that was anxious to build.
We don't have enough water for them.
So, and that's what that was the relevance of my question is, how are we, what says whether we're allowing residential or business? And
so a little bit of that, I guess a little bit of it goes back to the rezoning piece of it. I mean, so if, let's just say we've got our water line at 250 and it goes right in front of this big lot, and so one, let's just say it, and I'll use an example we had that came before us, we had someone that wanted to build, I don't know, it was like 600 homes.
600 homes on 400 acres.
Yes, and they
off
wanted...
Off of this line?
Yes, they wanted to, they would have loved to hook up to the system, mm-hmm. but one, we don't have the capacity, that's, to do that development, they would need like 300,000 gallons per day for all those homes.
But am I legally free to say who I think that was? Just to know if we're talking about the same developer.
It's right. It's close to Beaver Dam.
Okay. So if we had capacity, but we would just. We still would have been in a zoning situation, but we would have been.
Well, yeah, I mean, if the board said we want to rezone it to residential and we had the capacity. Then yeah, then if within our zoning ordinance, if they're in a lot that's been rezoned, yeah, it's connecting to our system, they would actually be required to hook up to our system then, and so then that would eat up a lot of our capacity. So again, for us, we are not discouraging residential, but we certainly want economic development and commercial, and so I think the way the ordinance and the fees are drafted, it provides a good competitive fee structure for all.
Okay. And mandated hookups. So one, somebody building in this area is going to be new, but no matter what kind of building, is going to be mandated, correct?
Correct.
What about if it's, and I might have heard this before, and what about though if it's somebody that has a well or septic that goes down, they're not mandated?
No. Nope. So as long as they can get a new permitted well by VDH, we are not going to require them to hook up, and quite frankly, maybe we don't want them to hook up from a residential standpoint. If they can get VDH to allow a new well, then fantastic.
Okay,
and then same thing with the sewer piece too. As long as the permitting agency will allow it on a residential standpoint, but on commercial, you're going to build a commercial lot right there in 250. You are required to hook up to the system if you're building it. Now I don't remember from the commercial standpoint if. From a well, if they're already on an existing well,
they're already on existing, they don't have to.
That's right. We didn't do it. If you're already on an existing, you don't have to. But if you're building new, you're required.
What's a typical cost of a well for a home in Cubatta County? We know.
Nick, didn't you have an estimate?
Yeah,
$7,000. Yeah.
So, for a larger well,
it's about 10. Do it on your own. $7,500.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to worry about your welfare.
By the time you run into the house, it's $9,400 roughly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, just call it. You know, you're close to $10,000 if
that's
you.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But you run the risk that it fails.
That's right.
And you run the incentive right. To do it on your own. You have to operate and maintain
at that point in time, right? So once you fail, you're likely going to convert.
Yep.
All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hearing no other questions from your board, we'll now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? I see no one inside. Do we have anybody online wishing to speak?
Doesn't appear so.
Don't see any. And I don't see any. Ms. Harris, do you see any?
No.
Just got one.
Oh,
yep. Actually, I do.
Yep.
Mr. Guano?
Yes, sir. One, I was listening to everything and didn't realize you were wrapping up that quickly. But thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Name and address, please.
What was that?
Name and address, please.
Oh, sorry. Donna DeGuano, 148 Crepe Myrtle Drive, Palmyra. But I wanted to thank you guys because that's such, you know, necessary work. And kind of the last thing you tend to think about is somebody that's using everything, but the first thing you think of when you don't have it. So really great. Thank you so much. The reason that I'm online is basically I would love for Flavanna to look at doing a tree ordinance. We're going through and doing...
Mr. Guano, this is not public comment. This is about the water and sewer ordinance.
Darn it. Sorry. I thought it was public comments.
No, ma'am. I hate to tell you this. We've already done both of those tonight, ma'am.
You know what? I was wondering. I got delayed. Okay. Thank you. I'll continue to listen.
Yes, ma'am.
Have a good evening.
Take care. Another time.
Yes, ma'am. Anyone else wish to speak to the public hearing? Okay. Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Are there any questions or comments from the board about all this? Ms. Eager?
Christina can answer anything from a technical ordinance standpoint, if there's anything. Like I said, I want to thank the three of them. They did a lot of long work on this. But again, there's two motions. Motion for the ordinance stuff, and then there's one final motion to adopt the utility master plan. That's kind of the document that kind of fed into the all of the ordinance and rates and fees and everything.
Well, we've come a long way and worked really hard to get water up at this area. So it seems to me that this is the next step, that we have to go forward with this, because without it, we've got water and we're going to do it.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Booker?
I think I've said this before, this is a long time coming, and I'm so glad that I'm able to be sitting on this board to see us moving forward. I know we still have a lot of other things to do, but this is the answer to a lot of people, especially board members over the years, who had this as have been talking about it, and it's like a dream. We got so close to making a deal with Louisa. It went since I was on the board, probably 2008, and that was the time when everything tankered, and we walked away from that. So look how many years it has taken us to get here. So I really, you know, appreciate everybody along the way who have added something to this to help us get to where we are. And to me, it's really a privilege for me to be sitting here at this day and time and to see this beginning of something that it's going to happen. This is finally going to happen.
Mr. Fairchild, Mr. O'Brien.
I just want to get some quick clarity. constituent called today, I think might be listening in. The first ordinance repealing the chapter 21 and then reinstating, you gave me some explanation of that. I think it was to me when this first came in front of us, and I didn't explain it, I think, the way that you would have. Can you explain?
I think Fred did.
Or maybe one of the
I think Fred could probably more eloquently explain it.
Well, the problem is that the existing chapter 21 is limited in scope and it's limited in text. This proposed ordinance is massively expanded and deals with other subjects other than water. So it simply isn't practical to go through and line out every line of the ordinance and replace it with this ordinance. All you're doing is greatly increasing your clerical time, and it doesn't help anything. So what's a much more efficient way to do this is to simply repeal existing chapter 21 and reenact it as reenact it in its entirety with this new ordinance. Now, the second part of that is that if you notice, there are three things being done. One is repeal the existing ordinance. Two is replace it with the new ordinance. And third is to adopt, you're not ordaining, you're adopting and approving the various
fee
policy
schedule
documents, fee schedules and the utility standards and that sort of thing. That's what you're doing. And that's why it's done that way.
Can you imagine? I just had a thought in my mind how much red ink we would have been looking at.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw it, and it was very unhelpful. So to try to address that, you'll see that we tried to do history references where a similar topic was covered. There are references to the current ordinance in our existing ordinance. So if you did want to look at and see what we had that covered a similar topic, which we didn't always do. The other thing that's really interesting here is while we were writing this, actually halfway through it, in their infinite wisdom, they redid the Virginia Administrative Code Waterworks Regulations, which is like a 400-page document that they hadn't touched in like 20-something years. That is all over this. They just completely rewrote it. So we caught all those things. So of course, while we were doing this, that happened. So all of those references are not correct to the new one that actually came to play July 2021. A surprise to everyone. We're just gonna redo all this and just post it. So we caught all those things. There's a lot more there. We were more detailed, which most people's ordinances were. Remember, the Fluvanna County system actually only had sewer. Like, we had FSDI, and FSDI has its own chapter that we're not touching at this moment. A little bit of the water and sewer ordinance, we had covered a couple of FSDI things, still does. But really, it was for Palmyra sewer system. We weren't really doing water through the county system, and now we are. So it addresses all of the water stuff that we didn't have, because we didn't have a Palmyra water system, just sewer. So just to sort of...
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I was in fact correct that I was not able to all.
I would love to have had a tape of what you told me and compared.
What did you say?
It was abbreviated to that, I can tell you.
All right.
I mean, you know, I've only been a part of this for 10 years, and it's been a big part of why I ran to begin with. But I know so many people put in a lot of effort, a lot of really hard work, and I really appreciate not just the current staff, but previous staff and previous studies, and certainly Dewberry did an excellent job. No question about it, it's very comprehensive. This is a quantum leap forward for Fluvanna, and I echo Mrs. Eager's and Mrs. Booker's comments, and I'm sure I will echo Mr. Sheridan's when he makes them. But
I'm gonna be short and sweet.
It's a quantum leap for Fluvanna, so it's an exciting moment to be here.
When you talk about former staff, the one thing that I thought about when you were looking at the numbers is I believe these are the numbers that Wayne came up with, Mr. Wayne Stevens, when he did the He was one of the ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He did a lot of work on some of the original models and stuff, but again, a lot of this information really came from the master plan and just Dewberry going through the whole information. But, yeah, there's a lot of previous staff that was definitely...
If we ever try to name everybody, we're going to miss all of them. That's why I said I'm going to be short. So having said I'm going to be short, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt an ordinance to repeal Chapter 21, Water and Sewage Disposal of the Savannah County Code in its entirety. 2, adopt and reenact the proposed attached replacement ordinance entitled Chapter 21, Water and Sewage Disposal of the Savannah County Code in its entirety. And 3, adopt the related proposed attached Appendix A entitled Water and Sewer Fee Schedule to be published as an appendix to the Savannah County Code. And further approve to adopt and adopt the proposed Savannah County Zions Crossroads Community Water Works Utility Standards Manual, the Cross Connection Control and Backflow Prevention Program Manual, and the Emergency Management Plan for Extended Water Power Outages, each dated September 2022.
So, who was that? Oh, Miss Eastra. I went to say something, I apologize.
And just before, I just wanted, just for clarity, that the board is adopting the proposed scenario two.
That's not written in there anywhere. We're all okay with that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but Ms. Booker, would you like to make a motion too? Since you've been here the longest with this board.
Yes. I move the Board of Supervisors adopt the utility master plan dated September 2022 as presented.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Hallelujah.
Well, Mr. O'Brien, I think we actually have time that we don't need to extend. If you can get us to back.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move the Savannah County Board of Supervisors enter into into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of, where is this thing hiding?
Oh,
I'm
sorry, for a second.
Behind the same one.
Two pages behind.
Yep.
I apologize.
Okay. Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel county attorney services.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. Mr. Guano, I do apologize.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move a closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and 2, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
I second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do I have a motion to extend to 9:40?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
Motion to adjourn.
Aye. Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We